March 24th, 2011, Pittwick.
I called the insurance, my insurance agent at 8:30 this morning, and I got a recording. What the hell?
They're like a bank. Yes, they are. They're just like banks. And they don't stick around until like 6.
No.
They're closed at 4.
No, you go down, in Camas there, you go in there. What the hell's the matter with you people? Did you ever work? People.
Think about where you live. We're still out in the boonies. They eight to three or something. Hello, Joe.
I expect Lowers to be late, but what about Ruff and Wills?
Did you advertise this meeting?
Yeah, so.
Well, Wills may be on the phone because he can't cover even parking at this point. So he's been pinching a ride with Charles Morrell. He's been hitching a ride with Charles Morrell to other meetings like TMT yesterday.
There's our federal rep.
Your budget's that bad?
Yeah, apparently.
Because of the CR.
You're going my way.
he's out in the corner with cardboard.
We'll work for Smolt.
We'll work for other.
We'll work for Boltrow.
I'll give Dave a call on his cell phone, see if he's hung up.
Well, he probably disconnected that.
That's probably true. Sorry they have that.
You can't afford
cell phone.
It's got to be his own.
Took away all the
state
cell phones.
I went down.
It's the same money. How about the amount of money that the state...
Mel has no idea how much rigorous PRNC is for now.
That's got to hurt.
How much to write them for?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you told him.
I can see for writing.
Is that exactly $20,000?
Oh, it's like $19,100.
That's a big hit for whoever.
Okay.
Verizon or T-Mobile.
Oh, just whatever.
State of California, all those.
You didn't even call yet either.
Okay. Well, yeah, I saw you said if you did, you pulled the Mission Impossible.
Please do it on the paper.
Yeah, that was nice. Oh, cops. You only get it
from the office. I'm sure they did, yeah.
I thought once we get through these first agenda, I'll get the mail. Since Brad's, put me up front.
You got a spare agenda?
Yes.
Can you pass one this way, Brad? I got it. I just memorized.
I did. Thank you, Brad. I'm wondering if you're going to call me in or downstairs.
I got
some security or what?
John Day's in the middle of
it. Anyway,
it is.
Can you holler?
Yeah, I will.
You can get these jowls.
I got them both in here.
Yeah, and Nels and all them are.
You got that up.
I've got staff in the sturgeon program. There's some issues about sturgeon flying that apparently is. Yeah, no, they broadcast the dates and things around the
solar case.
And so they want me to bring up the issue of potential impact to sturgeon spawning.
Were you leaving?
Apparently,
that's what you're saying.
Very good team.
I don't want to say I'm not sure what
leadership. Leadership.
That was delicate. It may be that that's where the egg mats are.
Brother.
The construction period is well away from the spawning period, but we need to probably just need to give some consideration.
We're going to want to take the gantry out.
So I may have him come to the next meeting.
Sure.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. The second part of the gantry.
You better have
him. To rehab it.
Can we do that in the winter?
No.
Did anyone get back to you? Because I emailed Stephen and Brian Schmidtke about that. No, nobody's responded back. So I got checked.
Yeah, I even left him a phone message. I said, dude, you're going to get eaten alive.
So what do you do without the structure? Can you use models to
do? We can. The project said before, because this has already been coordinated. It was coordinated last summer that the gantry would come out. Yeah, and but now, Upham would like it to be delayed a year.
Because?
Because the project now has decided that they don't want to use the tie crane to lift the screens, though it was coordinated before that they are quite capable of doing it. Safety, and it's complicated and slow. And
what would you use that just happening?
It would be more for the STSs to pick the STSs, and so we don't normally do anything with them throughout the year unless we need to repair them.
Gave them a little bit of extra time.
So it would only be for emergencies.
So you're going to inspect the STSs. You have an emergency, you're going to do something with any of their mobile
or the unit goes down.
Well, it's the two. They're using the tie crane plus a mobile to pull them up, right?
Have we ever had
I have an email from Perletti that says that they need some special rigging for it, but
it's a single
that they can do it.
11 already.
Okay.
Have they ever had an in-season break of an STS? Or they had
yeah, they have to pull it out and repair some rip mesh on it.
From the inspections they've had.
Yeah, before.
Yeah, I mean, after 720 hours, you know, they usually pull them up and inspect them.
They don't pull them, they put the camera down.
Yeah.
And then they only pull them if there's an issue.
Right.
But they do get issued. If it's a high debris year, you know, you get more holes.
Oh, Gene's here too. Good.
720
for
hours.
Rod makes it
a month of run time.
It's going to be a good show. Yeah, I think you probably should have set some stuff in.
They don't put a camera down.
Yeah. They used to have to pull them up.
You know, Brad with
camera.
You want money? You get here. And stand in front of me. Right there. That's good. Right there.
Yeah.
John on one side, Gene on the other.
Yeah. Kevin sent you an email that said that the tie crane can pull the STS.
Oh, and I saved it. That was last summer.
Show. Yeah.
I guess people.
Did you get a hold of Dave? Hey, Rick, did you get a hold of Dave?
He left a voice message.
Voice message wherever he is.
Should we just start? I mean, it's.
What'd you call it? Something like that.
Yeah. It's late enough. Could add.
I'll try his office just to see if he's there. Phone's not on. That doesn't help.
He may be on the back of a truck trying to get some chickens.
Going to Linden, Washington instead
of that. That'd be a long day to jump on the chicken truck.
Let's go ahead and get started.
Yeah, right. Let's go ahead and get started. Does everyone have an agenda?
Yes.
Okay, since Bob was not going to stay, but Mike, you can wait till the middle of the agenda. So the first, it's an action item. Is there a sign-up sheet?
Yes.
That's it, please.
Who's
on the phone?
We'll do introductions here.
I'm on the phone. It's Natalie, but I'll come down when my time is on.
Okay. Anybody else on the phone?
Brent Welton on the phone. I'll be down with Natalie at the time.
Anybody else?
Okay, and let's go ahead and go around in the room.
Brad Eppert, Corps. Ed Schwartz, Corps.
Jason Sweet, BPA.
Mike Langsley, Corps.
George Medina, Corps.
Randy Lee, Corps. Trevor Condor, NOAA.
Tammy Mackey, Corps.
Gary Fredericks, NOAA.
Craig Krueger, Oregon Fish and Wildlife.
Gene Bosky, DNNL.
Okay. The first action item from the last agenda had to do with the KELT study. It's the only action item. Dennis was going to get better surrogates. He pulled it off. So that's done. Are there any additions or anything like that to the agenda?
So what did he come up with?
Yeah, thanks to ODF and W in part to that. A lot of people pulled through to get him fish, including PGE, ODF and W folks.
Trevor.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we partnered up with ODF and W out of Roundview Hatchery.
Okay.
They got extra brood stock from Roundview. That was the Hatchery staff, and as well as PGE. We got permission to use PGE's transport truck. So both PGE and ODF and W were key. Trevor was key on getting linked up with the right people at the right time. So John Thorpe, ODF and W, these fish had to go through the permit process to get accessed, and then they had to pass a health screen. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife had to give me a transportation permit to drive them 3.5 miles.
I'll have to talk to those boys.
Exactly. So, and then Columbia Intertribal Fish Commission, which they're not here, Mr. Lors is not here yet, but they were instrumental in helping us haze for sea lions during that operation. So there was a multi-agency group that helped us get the right fish for our study, and we pulled it off. So appreciate ODFW's help. Is this on? It's on the recording.
It is.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, any additions to the agenda?
If you have added adult ed.
You said you did.
Yeah, I did. Sorry, I was adult trying to call Dave.
Oh, no, you didn't say it then. Okay. Before you were here. Hmm.
So, get into the B2FGE. George or Dennis?
We were up.
Okay. You're up.
You're up. Okay. If I hand out a few notes.
Good.
I want to write them. I want to make a correction here to the first bullet on the PTFTEs. The fact is, I should read the modeling plan is available, and I believe that was provided for the CFT model that we're working with.
Yes.
CFT model validation, to some extent, is complete. We've incorporated velocity measurements and measured it up against the physical modeling constructed for the installation of the FGE some years back. Basically, we're going to use this model for screening purposes. We've identified a litany of alternatives that we're going to look at. We should be starting on that sometime this week, if not to start next week. We're looking to have a completion of the alternatives report by the end of April. That's what we're striving for. We may slip a little on that given where we are with our CFT model, but for all intents and purposes, that's the intent, with the final completion of early to mid September of this year. And I think that we would like to get together with you folks down the road a piece just to give you a more in-depth assessment of where we currently are, give you the opportunity to assess where we are. Randy, you want to go through some of the details here?
One thing I might add, you know, we got a lot of alternatives that we would like to look at the model. If there's some way, maybe if we could have a discussion and not have to do all the modeling, because it is going to take a lot of time. We're not trying to get out of work, but if there's some way we can
narrow the alternatives
exactly. down, and then that would help us in our study. But you know, if it happens that we can't, we'll do what we need to do. But there are a lot of alternatives there. We can somehow come to some agreement on narrowing down. That would help me.
An example to support what Randy's saying here.
Alternatives.
Yeah. Address major changes to the actual structure of the dam.
Take the dam down? Yeah. Breach? It's a good idea.
We don't need a model.
How to fix it? Okay, yeah, we haven't seen any of these alternatives yet. So
things like that. It might be a bad idea first. You've been wanting to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been missing a lot of meetings, and you know, my memory isn't what it used to be. So what issue are we addressing here with this?
Well, just to recap very quickly, we've been having some issues with sub-yearlings getting slammed up against the screens.
BBS.
BBS.
And we believe that that might be attributed to high turbidity in the gate wells.
Like turbulence.
Turbulence.
Sorry.
And turbulence, right.
Turbidity probably doesn't help either.
So what we want to do is address that. We want to, first of all, know how much water we actually have going in those gate wells. How much water we have going through those BBSs. And we come up with alternatives that might address that. Basically, you want to be able to throttle that water going up.
Some are structural, some are operational, like turbines. For instance, you know, operating the turbines at a different load during the season to reduce the gate well. There is a tie between gate well flow and the turbine and unit operations. For instance, the higher their turbine flow, the more gate well flow.
Great. Thanks for catching me up.
So Randy, you said there's a lot of alternatives to look at. You'd like to narrow them down.
Yeah, some are on the surface look pretty benign, like add a second orifice to the gate well or open up a second orifice. But that has some issues with the DSM. Can it handle that extra flow? If it can't, what do we need to do about it? And you know, we want to try to talk through those issues, and if we can, say, yeah, you know, maybe that might not, based on certain conditions or certain outcomes, we might not go there anyway because of cost or because it just, you know, maybe this DSM works fine already, and we start making changes, major changes, such as increasing screen lengths, sizes, making changes to the collection channel, wider, larger. That, you know, those are issues that we have to address.
I think our, we were talking about a plan with the team was that we're now getting into the modeling portion of it. We're validating the model.
Yeah.
So at some point, we wanted to run the model, validate it against some parameters that we've already collected, data sets we've already collected mm-hmm. against the model, and then have that information. I think the same time we could be looking at presenting the alternatives we have and asking the region, okay, here's how the model's going to work. Here's how we're going to validate it, what parameters we're going to be testing at, and then select, help us narrow down the alternatives that we're going to run through the model.
Yeah, I think that's what Brad said.
So Gary indicated you have seen all of the alternatives.
We've set out several times.
It's been a while.
It's been a while that we haven't made a lot of changes, but there's been this set of alternatives.
So there's a 30% report.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty yeah.
Sad. Dig it up again.
Yeah, we can set it back out, but there's been...
I don't even remember seeing it. So yeah. I probably didn't look at it.
So we do have some original alternative sets that we have. We've had some new ones that we want to add to that so we can update the alternatives set.
I would
send it to you.
Rather than send something out, I can send something out, but let's schedule a discussion.
Yeah.
We'll sit down, because otherwise we won't focus on it.
Okay.
And go through the alternatives.
Go through the alternatives. I think we can probably knock some of those out before we get to the modeling phase. And then the modeling phase will help knock some of those out.
Right.
And the end of it, we're probably still going to want to see a physical model. If the result, you know, the option we choose is fairly extensive, you know, like cutting out concrete, putting in a bigger VBS or anything like that, especially to get a good idea of what the flow characteristics are in the VBS. And, you know, debris handling is another issue here, too. So,
given currently where we are with our assessments here at CFP, I would recommend that we get together sometime in the latter part of April, perhaps even better at the first part of May.
Yeah, April's shot for me, 100%. I think I have one day possible. At this point,
that might work out better. We'll have something. We'll have some substantive to show you.
Some May.
Or maybe some
May. Early May is May's good, but not April.
Okay.
So ahead of time, can we send out the 30% alternative support so you can see what alternatives there are, at least, and kind of know ahead of time, think about it.
Yep.
And then will we have the model, the CFD validated by then, at least, and some of the model results done, so we can bring
that. We're going to start. I think we have pretty good indications that we can start looking at some of the alternatives, and one of the alternatives is the easy one to do first is the operational alternative.
Well, don't we want to go back and look, because we tested different turbine unit loading,
right.
So one of the things we should do is look at full load versus the reduced load and what that does to gate flow.
That's the first.
Yeah, we're running
that would be
like,
useful.
Sure,
three or four
for what you want to achieve with the fix, but I don't think anybody's agreed that we would want to have unit operation.
No, I think just to
there
help us
assess
what the problem is.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, and that's like way, you know, that's like
up
way up front. Yeah, the 30%. We should be further than that at this point. So,
you're going to schedule.
Yes, I'll schedule a special hearing in early May. We'll send out the reiteration of the 30% report.
Okay.
I think what we'll need to include is what the additional alternatives that we're looking at to adding to it.
Because I remember, I mean, and maybe I've missed my brain, it's just kind of Swiss cheese here or something, but I remember us looking mostly at, you know, the BGS and how the effects of that was going to be on it, and all those things were kind of getting wrapped around the axle there. And so I don't think
there's some issues
focusing on,
like Randy said, adding orifices, changing the turning vane.
Those I remember, and those had problems that were serious enough to me that I don't see us going down that road either. I'll look at everything.
We need to say that these are going to be eliminated because
those are
going to
be. We're talking some big expense.
Yes,
there might be some old with turning vane, with flow control devices or. or...
Oh, I understand that, yeah, but that's...
I think the model, I think the initial CFP modeling is used to screen out, you know, help us understand what...
Yeah, I can see the use.
Speaking, what we could be looking at,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I think we have some of that information by the time May comes around.
Did you want to set up a tentative meeting date on this now?
Yeah, we're talking about the early parts of May. Can you still set that up?
Sure. I can look. I'll look. I need to. I'll look at the fish calendar. Tammy keeps updated.
Well, the third and fourth, and well, the afternoon of the third, there's a Walla Walla fitter waiting on the fourth.
And the
fifth. Delayed mortality workshop is the 9th and 10th. FPOM is on Thursday the 12th. And I've got a meeting in the afternoon on that day. Actually, I've got a meeting that whole day as well. Columbia River Treaty.
The 13th is tied up with SRWG.
When is?
The 13th.
It is? What's that?
That's what I've got for a summary review.
Yeah, that's a...
Summary review?
Oh. Yep, that's the research summary review meeting.
Brad just sent out that email that has the full...
The first 2 weeks are shut, so we're talking 16, 17, 18. Then we get SCT on the 19th.
When's that trip to D.C.? Where's that turbine? Yeah.
I want to say it's going to be the second week of May.
Yeah, second or third week of May. Okay.
Did someone say April was shot?
Yeah, get shot for Gary.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to be in Mississippi. I'm going to be there for 3 weeks.
I will go back to the calendar and start looking at and proposing a couple dates for Doodle Poll.
Okay. Yeah, let's target mid to late May as the time frame.
Yeah. Okay.
30th works.
Okay. 30th of May?
Memorial Day.
It's open. Come on, where's your dedication?
Memorial. Memorial.
Okay.
Light attractor study. This is a follow-on to some of the work that we did at McNary. If you recall, the study at McNary indicated that there is a good potential for light attraction in terms of light attraction fish. We picked that up and we're looking to apply some of that, some of those lessons learned there for Bonneville. And force that in, develop a design document, if you will. We've gone out on site and made some observations. We determined that there's definitely impacts on the jet. So our scope is to evaluate and identify alternatives with the most potential. We should have a report here at 60% thereabouts this summer, I'm thinking of July time frame, with the scheduled completion date of sometime in November. Dennis, you want to speak to any details in particular?
Not too much. I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, the design, the orifice design, the core size, a lot of that has already been decided. And we wanted to validate some of our assumptions by what the current jet looks like, what are the impacts out there, so that's why we did some field work.
Huh? It looks like crap.
Yeah. And so what would it take to clean a jet up? The other is the question on how, you know, what type of lighting, what would the orifice light look
sure.
like?
Yeah.
So
LEDs,
that's
something.
Yeah, and that's just the final part of the design. So really, this is moving forward very quickly because there's not a lot. Some assumptions of what equipment we can reuse out there, you know, when it comes to drivers and valves and things like that. But a lot of the quote-unquote design and orifice size, things like that, is going to be completed very quickly.
Is this going to be affected by the first agenda item?
Yes. This is definitely intertied to the B2 FGE work.
I think so.
And so George has asked us to make sure we're on a parallel track to make sure that anything we're doing here is going to dovetail in with what we're doing with the B2 FGE alternatives. So George wanted to make sure that when we're ready to pull the plug on any alternative suggestions that we're ready to implement the orifice light and orifice coring.
We're all on.
Yep.
Great.
So that's why it's
safe set up. Bucks.
Yep.
Somewhat related, B2 coring collector. Gate hoist, if you recall, you guys asked us to develop a hoist to address safety concerns and get able to turn off water on and off at the collector. We're in a position now where we're looking to award a contract. We're in final negotiations with the contractor. Assuming that this is a definite go, and I'm confident that it is, there's nothing that stands in the way. We should have our contractor on board here pretty quick. with the idea of fabrication late spring, early summer, installation of the actual unit this upcoming winter. I don't anticipate any glitches. It seems to be going forward, so move it ahead.
Being before I retire, that'll be good.
Yeah. Make sure you tell Scott.
Oh, well, about this. He's going to put a smile on his face.
Who's just called in?
Dave Trachtenberg with Walla Walla.
Guys, I also wanted to let you know that Steve Hasker was downstairs. I went to get a cup of coffee, and so I just put him in the system, and Dave Wills is also there. I was trying to help him get through the security.
They were down there when I was down there.
At that point.
They're still down there.
Thanks, Natalie.
Yes,
Steve up against the wall. Yeah. Under orders of Brad.
I asked him if they wanted me to say anything, and they said, oh, we'll be up just a minute.
Oh, boy.
Okay, 20
minutes ago. Yeah, employee of Fred Ricks.
I know the feeling. I know what they're going through.
So on the B2 corn collector, just to close, once that thing goes closed September 1, that's when we've told the contractor that they can start modifications. So just wanted people to be aware of the corn collector. That's when it goes closed, and that's when we put in the contract where they can start modification work. So we want them to get some of the work done in the dry and the warm.
Okay.
There they are.
Let you in.
Did you get the glove?
You said you didn't need it.
No. Well, we didn't think we did.
We told them that you should.
Were you not on the list?
Steve wasn't.
Okay.
There's a reason.
We're just trying to keep gravel rounds out. Gotta let me know.
We're charging.
That hurt.
I don't think that wasn't intentional. Huh? It's sounding good. Yeah, we can cross that one off.
He used to work for that
thing,
but it sounded like they got the testing done at the corn collector, the sandy downing testing, all that's done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're done with the corn collector gate hoist?
Yep.
On the PSP?
No, I think it's John Day configuration.
John Day coffin.
John Day configuration and operation plan. We've got contractors out there now addressing the avian wires. They should be completed by April 1st at the absolute latest. I should say that they're ahead of schedule, so the initial target date of April 1 should be accomplished. Basically, what they're doing is they're bringing back up the lines, bringing it back up to criteria that is 20 feet off the surface. They're installing vibration dampener so that we eliminate the acoustic issues that we had out there in the past. They're also making it such that we can make those adjustments in-house as needed. So again, that's being addressed. Our COP, we're looking to have that completed by the end of April. And PDT has been pulled together to address how to address. PDT has been pulled together to address how do we go forward with making the TSWs permanent structures. So for all intents and purposes, we're on target with our objectives for that project. Any questions on that one?
That's why we were talking about bird wires. It's not on here, and Pat Dyke's the PM, but anyway, the Dalles bird wire work is being completed now too. New pole going in and new wires at the Dalles.
Uh-huh.
So that work's continuing. It will be done around April 8th as well.
Yeah, that's really on the agenda.
Yeah, is there anything else on the agenda you'd like to?
Sorry, I didn't see it down there. I wouldn't have brought it up.
Right, John,
I don't think Pat Dyke was going to show up. So.
No. I'm not sure if I have the same agenda you guys have, but Case, there's some of that subject and deflector optimization too. Are there issues there?
Sorry, say again?
Was there anything on the case study or the optimization of the deflectors?
No, case study is being, we're looking to complete that later this year, this calendar year. No issues there. We're moving ahead.
So the completion is tying up the work we've done and reporting on it. I thought we decided the previous bidder week that the expanded deflector optimization work wasn't needed.
That's correct.
Based on last year's results.
Just wondering why it's on the agenda then.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, just to make that point, that a report will be out on the work we've done. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And basically, what we're doing for the flow deflectors, we're incorporating that to a DDR that was generated a while back. So once that's completed, it's buttoned up, we'll let you know where it is.
Send out the report.
Have access to it.
Okay.
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 the Dallas Northeast fish ladder.
Would you talk about the permanent TSW? I'm sorry, I wasn't.
No. Sorry.
The permanent TSW work.
Yeah.
We haven't covered that. Sorry.
Does the acronym change when it becomes permanent?
Well,
do we know
what the permanent installation?
Just for your,
what is a TSW thing right now? Yeah, what is that?
So the ones out there are not. You know, we can't handle them with the cranes. They're I don't know if they're painted even. There's some changes that the project would like if they become a permanent fixture. And we're thinking, it's time to start doing the design work because we think that they perform well and we'll keep them. So that's the point is we've initiated a PDT to start doing design for making them permanent, whatever that is, if it's crane rods or if it's making them lighter so we can handle them or more pieces and painting them so they last.
Okay.
Those kind of things.
Okay, yeah,
let's not changing the hydraulic design or structure in any
or
way,
the bays or anything.
No, it's just that what's out there was meant to be prototyped.
Well, there's the issue of being able to put them in, take them out, or anything like that. So we need to talk about what's the intent and what's the long-term use.
Closure mechanisms, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yep.
Well, what you gentlemen mentioned is the key here. We want to make them mobile.
Right.
There are storage issues right now.
Right.
There's a tremendous amount of planning that goes into this to remove them. It takes almost a full day to remove them.
Right.
And we want to be able, in the case of an emergency, blood condition or something to that effect, be able to pull them up quickly, store them quickly. So towards that end, we need to make some modifications to the structure itself, or at least we believe that we do. The other option was, well, shucks, just get another crane. So there's different alternatives that we're looking at. There's pros and cons to all the alternatives there. So we'll march through those alternatives, evaluate them, and then come up with what we believe at that point in time, give recommendations and follow up, let you guys know where we are with it.
Okay.
All right. If there aren't any more questions on John Day, let's move down to the Dallas Northeast Fish Ladder.
I did have one question. Sorry, I got moved. It's either that or I bring my children with me. I think you all do have about that.
But we're glad you didn't.
Oh, come on. They're adorable. Loud.
That's why you're always so cheerful.
Yeah. On even wires, did they install those? There's like the two wires that didn't get installed at the very end. Did the contractor install those, or did they just go back and fix the problems they had?
They did not install the ones closest to the
very last one.
Right. Years ago. Exactly.
Okay, about John Dave.
Yeah.
Yes. But we, based on observations, the array I think more than covers what we're looking to do.
Yeah. I just want to say I've seen these out there. It was in the original design. Sure, it'd be nice out there. It adds you just another. It was like 1.2% coverage, whatever it was. But it's just one thing. I just wondered, since he's out there, it would have been a nice time to do it. Are we planning not to worry about that ever?
Let's just see how it works out this next year. And if we deem that it's necessary, absolutely. We'll go out there and make whatever modifications it is.
Good night.
Thank you, George.
All right. Any more questions?
Push that button.
All right. The Dallas Northeast.
Apply. Sign where George's at.
The Dallas Northeast ladder. Are we in progress with that? We've got, I think the recommendations that we're going to focus on primarily are, first and foremost, to rehab the units that we've got in place, buy spare parts, and in the event of failure, utilize the east ladder. I think the region's kind of bought off on that rationale. And then I think we're also looking at additional hydraulic resources, primarily in the fish lot we're thinking about in that cul-de-sac area. We still need to hammer that out. We still need to refine that. Randy's been working real hard to get us to that place where we have something to show you in the form of a document. I think we're close. We're not there yet. Randy, I don't want to take your time to speak to that, if you would.
We had a brainstorming report contracted out with HDR. The rep came back and recommended 15 or so alternatives, and they had the top three that they recommended based on a ranking system that they put together. We had one fish turbine speed load was one of them, and an intake siphon that went right into the AWS conduit, and also another siphon that went right to the fish lock and fish lock elevator in the caisson area. Our internal team met to try to again narrow down these 15, because I'm not keen on trying to analyze 15 of them. And we did eliminate one, and that was the fish turbine speed only because of operational concerns that HTC had when you go to that method. Essentially, it can be done, but it depends on the mode of failure that the fish turbine went through. If it's on the generator side, it might be okay. If it's on the
rotor,
it's not good. So it wasn't a reliable source of water to get to, and you had to hope that it failed in a certain way. So, but that left the rest of us, left the rest of those alternatives. But we kind of looked at it also in terms of the PDP's thoughts and saying, what's out there already? What's the kind of the low hanging fruit in terms of what flow sources are available? And it seems like ever since I've worked on the study last couple of years, as far as the backup system is concerned, it seems like the existing fish lock looked like it was a potential source to supply some of the water. So we're looking at those alternatives that kind of deal with that, plus picking up other sources that we could find along the way. There might be like a smaller pump that we might be able to put into a temporary pump into a pump well. Project is investigating some other sources that they have found, and that's going to take a little more work. But all these sources added up together, we hope would provide the emergency operation flow. So that's where we are.
It needs to be pointed out that our target objective in terms of hydrologic needs are those targeted at, I want to say it's 1,400 CFS that we're targeting, and I think 1,400 CFS is what we agreed to this body here, so that's our objective here. If we need 1,400 CFS, use the east ladder, make up water from other sources, and Randy spoke to that, I think we'll meet our goals and objectives. And I want to be very clear on this. We don't want to investigate this anymore. No more additional studies. I think we've spent several millions of dollars on these studies, and I think we're at a point now where it's either we choose the path that we're on, and I think it's a good path, or we scuttle the whole project. And I don't think scuttling the project is acceptable.
No.
So I'm hoping to have full buy-in into the rationale in terms of the direction that we're going, why we're going in this direction.
George, you've got buy-in on the queue and the opening gate openings and that, but what we don't have is buy-in on the means. And from what Randy, that concerns me a bit if you're just sweeping up crumbs along the way to make this thing work. We want to, like I said, the last couple of meetings, that I think it's time that we all sit down and have a discussion about this instead of, I know it's another meeting, but it's time. We had that one, with the contractor, but I think I was the only, Jason, were you there, or VBA? We had two reps there, but it was pretty thin, so... I'd like to see that, before you get too far down the road of narrowing things down, or you can throw out the ones you think are really dogs, but
we're far from narrowing down.
It's been a long time since we've had a sit down discussion about this and focused on it a bit, and I think that might help you out a bit.
I recommend then having Sean Taft, the biologist, try to set up something.
Yeah, I mean, the same time frame, maybe the same day as we have the other meeting. We could have all of these together.
It would be a good idea if we just
combine B2.
We've got on the table here.
Yeah. I don't think there's any others that are really in need of a sit-down discussion. These two definitely are.
What I want to say on this, I think that we're making, compared to where we were, I think we're making a tremendous headway. And I think we're narrowing the path now a little bit.
After 20 years, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Hopefully by 2015.
Yeah, this one I want to see done before I retire too.
Oh no, you're not retired.
Yeah, a couple more. Yeah, I'm expecting at least five more before this thing.
So this is your retirement package.
Yeah, the Fred Riggs.
This is mine. Yours is the rake at B2.
Yeah, the fish rake. The Lord's rake, the Frederick's
fish wake. We haven't talked about that one, so it's out there.
I know.
Yours was the corn bucket replacement.
That's the hoist? No, that's...
Nice try, Jason.
That's when he fills up the paperweight.
Yeah, well, that's guts.
So any more questions on this?
There's more than enough of these to go around.
All right. About the TSP, turbine supply program. The direct capture plans and specs package is complete. I think that's going to come back up for discussion.
Yeah.
And I say that because we need to have a biologic evaluation plan prior to the installation of these turbines. We need to have a natural plan that says this is how we're going to measure success, find and delineate it. Right now, the only things that we've got on the table are direct capture. We're also looking at injectable tags. We're looking at external tags or some combination thereof. So the point that I'm trying to make is that the options are limited. So at some point, we need to get together as a group, first and foremost, the PET, and certainly with your input, and then make some decisions in terms of the direction that we're going.
I think there's more options than I've heard on the table. So, you know, that's another one that, this, that deserves a discussion. We had discussion in December down at Erdick, sort of around the table in between model runs, that I thought was showing promise and was going areas other than these recapture techniques that would help us understand, at least to evaluate the new runners as we put them in. So I'd like to continue that discussion. Maybe April 4th, I think, is at the TSP-SIWG meeting. Yes. That might be a good one where we really talk about that and where we want to go with that.
Well, as it stands now, Dennis and Bob Johnson from the Walla Walla District are having tasked with putting together a straw man, if you will, of a plan that maybe perhaps at that point in time we can, you know, we can look at, flesh out, insert different alternatives or whatever.
Yeah, I'd like to get ahead of that one, you know, to tell you the truth.
I'm glad you said that. The point that I wanted to make is it's not too soon to start looking at long-term planning.
Yeah, I think we want to get some ideas out there before anybody gets vested in a particular idea or design.
I think that April. So I just sent out this morning and rescheduled the SRWG for TSB one pagers for the 4th of April. So that's in a mailbox near you.
It'll be over at our...
Yeah, it'll be
11
over...
11 to 4.
11 to 4 in our building.
So, but I think that'll be a good place to talk about the issues you want to talk about, Gary.
Yeah, I think so. I think
Bob
and
I put together straw man stuff that we're going to present there as well. So,
I mean, it's one page of development. I guess it's appropriate for that.
Yeah. It's the same stuff. It's caveating on the same stuff we talked about down at Erdick.
Okay, good.
I think with if we can move on to another subject related, with your input, your recommendations, we have USGS do data correlation. Gary and John Day, basically what we wanted to do was based on historical biologic data, are there trends, are there trends that we can observe in terms of how, what the relationship is between how we operate a powerhouse and the impacts on the fish. That report's been pretty much completed. There seems to be some correlation, but there seems to be some data gaps in there, so we can't really hang our hat on that.
I walked away from the AFAB review totally confused, so...
To that end, the report we have got it internally. We asked the TSP group to look at it for comments. I've gathered the comments back, gonna send those back to USGS. Once we've incorporated those comments, then we're gonna send it out for regional review via the SRWG process. So that's kind of where we are with that.
People called me afterwards and said, "Be confused."
Yes.
I'm so confused I can't even answer.
We're all confused.
I think that there is, however, some potential for lessons learned here for the future in terms of biologic testing, in terms of setting up our plans, biologic testing plans. So I'd like to think that the effort that went into this report is not futile. There are some gains there. So, like I said, lessons learned.
Where are we on getting the comments back from the...
The comment, I've asked the team to send us comments back. By the end of this week was the end, I think, the comment period. I was pulling those together, going to send them off to USGS, ask them to incorporate those into a final draft. And they were supposed to turn that around by the middle to end of April, and then send it, and then I'll send it out to the region for review.
You have any comments from anybody?
I've got comments back from Rod, Lori Ebner, who else? John Reynolds, Walla Walla District, my comments. There's four or five folks.
Certainly welcome.
Gary's part of that team as well.
I know.
I was going to send that out to for the region to review.
You said 13th. TSP rep, Eric Volkman.
Eric Volkman is still your TSP rep?
Got to find a new one.
Send it down in Nevada.
Yeah, where's your own wreck?
My old Nick, actually.
Nick? Yeah,
there you go. Send it to Nick.
Oh, okay.
Do my work.
Who?
Nick.
Oh, Dublin.
He was here 5 years ago.
Yeah, right.
That for some reason came out.
Is he back?
He's here.
Yeah, he's back.
Oh, okay. Did good enough.
Oh, that's...
Okay. Oh, he went to Bureau of Rec.
Yeah, Volk went to Bureau of Rec. Lane to
Hoover,
congressional researchers.
Oh,
right,
right. Hoover.
He's
down.
He's found lovely warmth.
Sunny okay. South.
Looking.
Okay.
Yeah, he's playing lovely
cheap housing in the matter.
Okay.
So George, you got to take his B1, B2 studies continue at Erdick. I just kind of wanted to give you a heads up based on budgetary constraints. However, B2 may slow down a little bit. I'm working this through with Mike, but the bottom line is the funding that was necessary for the continuation of B2 at Erdick is running low. So we'll see how that plays out for the budgetary. And I mentioned that I think you folks were down there for the actual testing of that model. So maybe perhaps you can brief me on what happened down there.
On the which one, Ice Harbor or B2?
Ice Harbor.
Let's just say we weren't exactly as thrilled as we thought we would be.
Gary, the fact is you're never thrilled. So.
You didn't have a warm.
Well, this time I was a lot less thrilled than I normally am.
We all
kind
of... 1
to 10. How thrilled were you? How thrilled?
On a 1 to 10, yeah, about a 0. Yeah, we walked in thinking, wow, this is going to be great. Fixed blade, four-bladed fixed blade design. We thought done a pretty good job of the hydraulics, but walking away from it after looking at the model for a bit, there was still way too much swirl left in the runner, below the runner. We saw a lot of spinning of beads coming off of all areas of the blades, mostly the tip and the hub areas, but even towards the center of the blade we saw beads spin off of that. They were not only twirling on their axis, but also spinning in a white, fairly white rope. So that I think they were trying to retain a little too much efficiency from a fish passage perspective. So
they were pretty.
They're going
pretty
back
sure
to iteration two.
They were set up correctly. I mean,
they were sure. Yeah, Davidson had already pretty well. You know, we went back and checked that too. Yeah. Davidson was pretty touchy about that. So,
yeah.
I think we're going to be in iteration two for that runner design. They'll probably have to tweak the blade length and pitch. I think it was just too flat.
You confirm what Sean Nelson was saying to me. Basically, what he says is they need to go back to the drawing board, make some adjustments.
Yeah.
But they believe that they're on the right track.
I think they're on the right track, too. I think it's just a matter of, they may need 5 blades instead of 4 and change the angle and change. No problem.
Bigger draft tube.
They're on the right track. Bigger draft tube, maybe.
That would be so.
No, I think there's the mods that Erdick looked at actually filling in draft two look pretty good too, so we knew that ahead of time, but it stayed looking good, so that didn't change. But the area just below the runner and the elbow area did, I don't know, I think a fish going through there could come out worse than the existing design. So
as you point out, that's typically where we have issues at that area.
It is, but we thought, going through there, that we thought we had fixed that. I mean, the pressure was more of an issue, but as far as the geometry and the passage through, I thought it was going to be pretty smooth. And I saw a better geometry. I saw a better fish passage on the existing McNary runner running at 13.2 or 13.3 KCFS than I saw in this new design. So that's for what that means.
Well, more on this to come on.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, they're in the second iteration. I think, and I don't understand all the things that they changed on. That, but from what Voith said, they weren't worried about it. It didn't faze them at all. Really, they didn't appear disappointed. And I'm not sure if they understood what we were saying. The Pennsylvania accent and the Western accent and the Southern accent all together. I don't know if we were talking the same language.
Well, Pennsylvania people don't like Missouri people at all.
Yeah, right. That's what it is.
Isn't Voith still to test a Kaplan version of that too?
The Kaplan version is actually quite a bit different right now. I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about these things, but I think right now they're looking at a 5-blade design.
and there's some pressure issues that are driving that. So Kaplan's going to be a little different design, and you know, we haven't seen that yet. And that'll be the next model trip. I think we're looking at that sometime in. I think the first look is actually in June, if I'm not mistaken.
So the overall plan still is to keep with the fixed blade first and then cap on the scale?
Yeah, the fixed blade's got the first, but you know, they're following pretty close, I mean, almost parallel, or, parallel design.
Well, where are we with V1 MGR operations? I thought we came out of that trip with a recommendation to change the operating band for V1.
Yeah,
that December trip.
No, that's the white paper design.
Dennis is working on that, and we need to get that as soon as possible.
Well, if we're going to do it, I'd like to do it before our test is in place.
Yeah, so that's, I've been commenting at O&M that needs to, and I think we can, you know, Dennis is trying to get the white paper together, and I think it's a pretty big change. I mean, we're moving away from peak efficiency operation to what we call best fish passage operation, so anybody who's concerned about that is going to want to see some evidence that it's a good idea.
I'm curious, you're aware of what we're proposing.
Yeah.
Any heartburn with that?
No, we understand it's a shift in the range is shifting, not the width of the range, even though it does make it a little bit.
Actually, the width will actually increase, get wider.
But B2 has kind of shrunk. Yeah. So.
B2 has shrunk until we get past this FG thing, so it offsets that. But it moves up maybe 3/10 of a KCFS from the bottom and a couple of KCFS at the top.
It's like 1.8 at the top.
0.3
at the bottom.
I think it's beneficial for you folks.
Yeah, it is. And it's, for us, it's always been when that range of operation narrows, that's where we have issues.
And this should be actually better for you guys. I think it'd be better for fish, too. So it's
win-win. Like
It does increase the amount of water we can flow through B1 as well.
About 18 KCFS are there.
Yeah, so almost 2 units worth of more water.
So our strat, or kind of our path forward on this is the white paper, then we coordinate that through
FPOM. And then we...
And then there was a technical decision just to move it up.
Yeah. Put it in the fish passage plan.
So that's going to happen by the next FPOM.
It needs to happen in weeks.
So what is the status on the white paper?
I've got almost all the data. I've got the tables that I wanted from that Bob's Davison sent me. So I would say we could send it out for internal review and then get it ready to send out next week.
That'd be great.
Talking about the B1.
That's pretty much all I had unless you have questions.
Okay. Thanks, George.
Thanks.
Thank you, folks.
The Lower Columbia River Survival Study, we're going to hold off on that until after all this other stuff is done. John will be here about 11. So we'll it may be after lunch, it depends. Survival study.
Wait a minute now. This is going to continue after lunch?
I think the announcement was 9 to 2, wasn't it?
9 to 2, yes, all right.
You don't have to stay.
Why? This is fun.
I was going to say, I've got the,
that's what I thought, too.
I've got Wi-Fi, and I guess you have the NCAA games on there, so it should be old.
There you are. You got Wi-Fi in that now?
Oh, damn.
So you took it away.
Turn it.
I had that shut down.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't have any updates on the survival methods today. The work's been funded and they've started. On the transmitter downsize work, I got a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I got the first bi-monthly update. They're throughout the course of the project. They're going to provide bi-monthly updates on progress. If folks are interested, I can just start sending those out to SRWG or together a list if folks are interested.
Similar to what you did last year?
Or spam.
Yes, but for a different project.
Right,
yes.
Right, but I mean the same type.
Yes, yeah.
Could you just give a general description if they have little prototype tags, or have they been designed and constructed already?
Well, they're working on that. I mean, they're working on the first prototype, the first version of the ASIC. Mm-hmm.
These are the injectable tags?
It will be, yeah. Well, that's the goal.
Okay. They haven't produced one yet, though. They haven't actually done it.
No,
they're still working on the circuit, the integrated circuit.
Parallel to that, they're also looking at different batteries, and not so much the same ones out, you know, on the market, but we're looking at some different chemistries for batteries. What kind of voltage do you get? What how much do we need? What kind of voltage do you get? What kind of life do you get? Those sorts of things.
Right.
And we sat through an engineering meeting the day before yesterday, and it took me a while to recover from that. But
especially a battery engineer.
Yeah.
You just slap Randy across the face, you know.
Yeah.
Hit it, Tom.
They didn't say fish one time. But one they're funny. And so so that's going on. They've also brought on a specialist in the PCO material to look at some alternatives for a transducer. It would make the transducer smaller.
Mm. Okay.
So going into it, we thought that the transducer would likely be the largest component remaining after we redid the battery but this guy seems to think that we may be able to get it smaller.
So we're seeing the finest thing.
That's the goal.
There's about $100 down the drain.
That's the goal. Wait, nothing lasts forever.
Yeah, there it is.
And the flexible cutting,
the ways that
they are the first step in the packaging, if you will, is they're looking at some different materials. One of the things they're looking at closely right now is using Teflon, and making a capsule out of Teflon. And of course, I think Teflon. I think my frying pan. You know, I think metal. Wait a minute. You know, and. And how do you get them to stick together? You know, so it's two pieces that go together like a capsule and all that stuff. I wanted to know how to glue that. I suggest the eggs stick to my Teflon. So, but anyway,
I bet you were
my contribution.
Take
it
out of here.
I don't think you need a new pan.
So that's where that. So I'm on a parallel. They're doing the ASIC, the circuitry for it. They're there's obviously a lot of details, and you want to try to get it as right as you can the first time. And so, a lot of testing. They're testing some different methods for one of the other code space management. About we have 65,000 codes this year. Up until we get implement all new receivers, we're only using the lower half of that 65,000. And so 32,000 and change. Grant County PUD is doing some work with JSATs. There are others that are interested in JSATs within the basin. And so code space management is going to become a pretty critical part of it. And so we're kind of looking into some alternatives for maybe changing the code a little bit. So that we can increase it's 31 bits. If you added a couple more bits, you could, exponentially add codes to that. And so there's some alternatives for doing that. So that's also all going on at the same time.
When you talk about goals, is it also a goal to maintain the same efficiency and detection rate as the current design?
Yes.
They don't want to exceed that at all, or just try to leave that and make it smaller?
They can exceed it, but they cannot fall below it.
Code-based management is going to be more and more important. I was just at a workshop yesterday on ocean ecology, and they're putting receivers everywhere out there. And the Southwest Science Center is putting them on elephant seals for mobile tracking. So they've got receivers on benefits out there.
They're using acoustic codes?
Yeah, they're using acoustic. There was BEMCO, I think, but still it would be the same.
Is it the same as JSATs? No, it's different, but
the goal is to eventually have these. Whether it's JSATs or BEMCO, you'll have boobies out there, you'll have boats, you'll have elephant seals, whatever out there. So
right.
If these tags last longer and longer, you'll get more and more information off them. So yeah, codes basically.
Right.
There's some questions about, so how many codes do we need?
How many computers, processors do you have processing the information? You can speed that up too. So so processor as well.
So an alternative is increase the bit length and, you know, and end up with, you know, a million or two unique codes. Or do you, you know, perhaps we, one of the things is looking at the code is set up to where it has what we call the Barker code. So the first 7 bits are, I'm a JSATS tag, and then it sends you the code and a CRC. And so the autonomous receivers are just looking for that Barker code. So if it's not the Barker code, they ignore it. Once that Barker code is received, then they record everything after that, as far as the code goes. And so one alternative is to potentially change the Barker code. Add, you know, the it's a 7-2 is what it translates to in a hex decimal. And so maybe you can have a Barker code that's 8-2. And then that 8-2 is ours.
Right.
And then everybody else can have 7-2 or whatever.
Combine that with a 32-core processor, off you go.
But that could be a problem, though. Then if someone in the basin decides to use 7-2, now you have your receivers are right now are geared for one Barker code. You open it up to a second Barker code, and now you're inviting in more noise as well. So from a processing standpoint, so that could become. So all those considerations are being made. So. But I'll put together a distribution list. Starting with Fitterwig. I know some folks in the tribes will want to see it as well. And send these updates out. I think they're bi-monthly. So.
I could probably cover avian predation. Sandra, is Sandra going to come out and talk to her, Brad?
I sent the stuff out and I haven't.
So there's a new PM, Catherine Warner's out on maternity leave, and I don't know if you've met her or not. She's probably come to a couple. Yeah. Sandra has stepped in. She's doing a great job.
Yeah, she takes the bull by the horns.
Yeah, she's going to get stuff done.
Is that rough work?
Yeah. So more than what's on here, a couple things I wanted to cover. I'll start with island construction, I guess. They're going forward with Mel here. We're letting probably this week the geo tech contract do the full core samples to look at where we're missing the island. They did a site visit last week, I think, to kind of look at.
When you say going ahead, though, you're saying going ahead with, well, if they can't. I mean, there's still the issue of the geotech floating.
That's what I just said. They're out there. They're go out through the exploration. I think
that could
stop it. The team's take is that they don't think it's likely going to stop.
Okay, so that's the deal. Okay. If that stops it, then they're not going ahead with bio construction.
No.
They're going ahead with geotech.
They're moving up. So, I mean,
you're going to help me here.
Got the funding and momentum to build an island. I think the first step is the geotech. San Francisco Bay.
But there's still the issue of food resources there, too. So I know more than I should say. There's a lot of details here.
Yeah.
Sounds good, but there's a lot of details.
At least there's movement on it.
Yeah.
I think it's been kind of parked for a while. And it's
it has a long time. Out. And so is San Francisco.
San Francisco Bay, they're moving on environmental coordination, but not very fast. So I don't know where, that's all she told me on that.
Okay.
Another update she gave me, and it's not on here, and I don't have all the details, but I know one of their floating islands, you know, they went out and inspected it, and it's having problems.
Oh, really?
So
this is in the bay?
Yeah, no, this is out by, it's not Sheepy Lake, what's the other one out there? We'll see, there's like two places out there that have floating islands.
Crump's not floating. It's
like maybe it is Sheepy. Is Sheepy the floating one?
I think Sheepy is floating.
So the contractor is. It looks like the contractor is going to try and remedy it. You know, because they want to build more of these. And they want it to work. So
Summer Lake is that the one that's is that floating? That's
yeah, that's Summer Lake. Lake.
It's an island too, I think. So they're having some problems with it.
Yeah, just a heads up. There'll be more on that. We just did the inspection. It's not sinking or anything, but they had concerns
just
about
listing. The
structure. It's drifting. Well, it's getting beat up by waves and stuff, and this company's never built an island this big. They build little islands for golf courses and stuff. You don't have little ponds, and so it's a little different for them.
Yeah.
I wanted to, the monitoring. I'm going to start with inland, because inland avian, the proposal we sent out for this year was system-wide, and we heard at the final proposal review, SRWG, Walla Walla, say we're not going to fund that. and I pushed back and wanted it for the lower river because of the Dalles wires and another year of John Day wires, and so that's what we're doing. That proposal is restricted to John Day, Dalles. I don't think about John Day and the Dalles. And the other thing that I thought, I hope you're aware of it, if you're not, it's a problem, let me know, is we're not doing any lethal egg stomach content analysis as part of this work. I didn't think people would care about that.
I know one person who probably cares about that.
I personally don't think it's needed. I think what we need is just number of birds feeding where.
Yeah, that's something I've been trying to get through O&M, a more structured accounting of avian predation, at least near the dams.
You know, so we can do that for our three dams, but I think it should be system-wide. I mean, the monitoring.
I agree. That's what I said. I'm not talking about Portland District. I'm talking about O&M from.
Yeah,
and I made the point last meeting that Walla Walla needs to do the same thing, and Dykstra agreed with that. So,
yeah. We develop it through this study this year in the lower river, and I think it needs to be something that can be handed off to project buyers when they go out and do their inspection.
That's my point.
Exactly. We have a new federal intern we hired who's done nationwide monitoring studies on air quality, and she's got some pretty good experience in this sort of thing. I want to engage her.
That's great.
That part of it.
It's not rocket science. I agree. It's not.
The other thing, and I know you probably know this, Gary, but we're moving out on.
Shut up.
You've been to more meetings than I have. But we're moving out on a cormorant management plan. Portland District will be lead on that part of it for the basin, coordinated with Walla Walla, who's moving out on an inland avian predation management plan.
There's a report out from Walla Walla District just last week or so that people should take a look at. That small Walla 239 pages or whatever report, have it reviewed before the avian or the predation SRWG.
What day is that one?
I was just looking to see where that is.
It's at my shop, so
it's on the 5th of April.
Yeah, 4-1.
Avian predation. Well, it's actually predation. It's marine mammals.
Is it all day long?
Yeah. Spicing.
The guy's got from 9-3. It's
out. Yeah. It's essentially all day. And we're talking about everything predation.
Which is mostly avian for us.
Well, yeah, really. You know, I don't see a lot of marine mammal in there either. Pike minnow we're already doing. Mesa's doing the warm water.
I've got a question about the cormorant management plan. It's part of that group at the Fish and Wildlife Service. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There's another wrinkle to that, and maybe you were going to bring it up, and that's that pile dike removal.
We've been meeting on that as part of the RPAs for estuary habitat restoration. There was one in there on pile dike.
RPA 38 is on pile dike
removal, and I think we're looking at both. And we met with Noah, and it sounded like the intent was really to reduce the amount of perching habitat.
It was.
So we have an ongoing study to look at which pile dikes we need to keep for maintaining the navigation channel, which ones we know those that we own. I think there's an opportunity there to do something on ones that we don't need to keep. We can just whack
them off.
But
the ones
they also
you do
want to
need
look at, because they do change, you know, sediment transport, and they can be used to enhance habitat. The team is looking at where there's opportunities for that.
Have
so
you guys
well.
Look at that dunce cap option?
That's what I said. Just go put the dunce
cap. Just make sure you put
four. I don't know why we can't do that. They said a lot of them are kind of rotten and stuff. We'll just cut them off.
Yeah, we can do that. I mean, that's the problem is we haven't had a good discussion, I don't think. There's been a lot of scattered discussions. So there's going to be some in-house, on our part discussions about this. And
I think that would be
we'll get back.
Cheap, easy thing to do right away.
I think so, too.
Progress on this RPA. I made that point in that meeting, and I think from Noah, the other side of the habitat.
Robert.
I've got a picture.
Carrying your message.
I've been pushing that issue of capping them.
Cindy has been kind of leading the charge in this and setting up meetings. And again, I think there's movement on that.
My plastic cap company would be glad to supply you with.
That'd be a recharge.
It's Teflon coated.
David.
So, Before we leave, Anthony, one of the issues that came up when we were talking to John Day issued the 3040. I don't know since we're not doing a 3040 test.
Lamp break?
Surprisingly not.
So we had this discussion. Is there any new issue? I think that I've talked to the project and Bernie, and our contract allows for moving hazers from dam to dam.
I just want to make sure that there was some talk about, so lethal take is not completely off the table?
Lethal take is off the table. We don't have NEPA coverage to do lethal take. Okay. And we were pushing it last year by doing it under the study. We did it for the study.
Right, yeah.
And,
part of the allocation for USDA.
Bernie thought there might be some flexibility there, but so you're thinking
of there's no flexibility there.
And also, since we're not doing the 3040 test, I don't know if it's as critical.
You know, I don't see the difference between 30 and 40 in lamprey passing through turbines. I'm not sure we know what that's going to do. And so I would guess that under either condition, you're going to want to be able to go out there and haze birds. And what I heard back from the project under observations of bird consumption of lamprey at John Day was it was below the avian wires. They were not going under the avian wires and getting lamprey. That's what Jonas told me.
Okay, cool.
So that's a little bit, I think that gives a little bit more safety margin.
They were not going under the avian wires to get lamprey?
Yeah, he said they observed and take a lamprey in 2009 they were. 2010 he said their observations of gulls taking lamprey were downstream of the wires. That's what he emailed back. Because I asked him, I said, how bad was 2010? Can you report back?
Wires downstream.
He said it's in the he said they're reporting it, so
okay. I remember
further
downstream.
I remember seeing them actually feeding right in the boils and turbines, and that could have been 2 years ago. So.
Yeah, I think that was certainly nine they were. I was not there at 10. That's just what I
saw it at 10. So.
The new wires.
That was nine.
Isn't
that right? 10 was when we had the wires.
They're unknown. They'll be in the force bills.
I didn't see that much in 10 when the wires were out.
We sent out a diagram of that today.
There's a lot.
It's a fan that goes through that.
I saw it live
out there.
Oh, yeah. All the way almost to the bridge.
Oh, at the Dalles.
Yeah,
it looks pretty good. Well, hopefully it'll do the job.
Yeah.
We've moved them all to that one spot, now there's no place to go. So what will they do?
French fries.
French fries.
Go for French fries or get more gold.
Yeah.
Is that
going to
be other? Go feed them the bird with them, but...
Tries in the year out the bank. Hire a bunch of people.
So are you satisfied with the lamprey answer?
Hopefully.
I don't know what more we can do.
No, I see to talk to Bernard next. We know that he's got flexibility. I'm just worried that when the lamprey coming through, we have problems with Dalles, then we have to make a tough decision. Like, do you want to pull a crew from the Dalles? Do you have lamprey? I'm just saying it's going to be, I can see some regional debate going on. Like, so we should take away protection of the Dalles to save lamprey that aren't listed. I don't know who could possibly be saying that. No.
The answer is no.
Yeah, there you go. There is no and no.
No
and
no.
I know. I'm just worried. That's the only thing.
That was a short debate.
That's the thing I'm worried about, is that if that did come up, there'd be some regional consternation about who you protect.
Go back and look at the Dalles last year. We had a lot of birds feeding in there, a lot. And
a
no
lot.
Wires, and we had pretty darn good survival still.
Yeah.
So with wires, I can't imagine it's going to be better.
As long as you tell no, that's not going to be a problem.
Yeah, pulling away.
It's a visible issue. You see them eating fish, but I think overall they're probably taking a big percent.
I'm not,
as long as those don't have a problem.
Three-tenths, right? Three-tenths of steelhead?
It'll have to be an in-season discussion if that arises.
Yeah. That's the only issue I have, is that if we have activity in both projects.
What I've asked Miro and Cordy is just, you guys are our eyes out there. You're going to have to report to us when you see this occurring so we know how to react.
If they're actually having a problem at the
see,
if they're starting to evade the wires and go down, I think that's...
I understand if you see a big lamprey spike come through and birds and it picks up a John Day, we still have some activity in the Dalles.
We've seen that 2 years in a row, so I expect it'll happen.
I do too.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, it's like, I don't know, are you going to be comfortable with saying, well, there's some activity in the Dalles? I mean, we don't know. With the wires in the Dalles, we might
solve
the
problem. Probably effective there, and we'll have guys twirling their thumbs. Or there's a crew at Bonneville probably could go anywhere. I haven't seen a gull problem at Bonneville.
Bonneville go down south of John Day.
The Bonneville gulls seem to be eating adult salmon more than they are juveniles. So
the bits,
I mean, that's
the pieces.
True.
The
bits and pieces, yeah. They're more keyed in on adults. So as long as the sea lions are doing their thing, then
I'm fine. I just don't want to
Gulls
get.
Are happy.
I would just hate to in season find like, oh, we saw some activity in Dallas, and then the region has to make a decision that's.
But you might think about moving them from down there.
I have no
slide
them
up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if we're not having an issue at Bonneville, then we got Acers. Yeah. Let's move them up unless they're chasing sea lions too. I don't know if they do both.
Yeah, we
they
have flexibility to move the crews wherever, for the most part, wherever we need to move them.
Well, this is
them,
a summer issue that we've been seeing. Yes, it's been
late spring.
Well, it's been actually in June, so that's past sea lion time. So this would be a good time for those guys to move up.
But we all, of course,
double the John Deere. There's your answer.
Okay. Cool. If that works for us, then I'm happy with it. I think it
works for everybody.
Until we have to try.
Is that Brad happy?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Okay, so. Done with Avia?
Done with Avia.
Okay.
Yes, I do take care.
I know. I know. I'm working on
talk
it.
About the pit detectors?
Oh, yeah. So. I got a PM, and I don't know if he's even going to be our permanent PM. You saw him earlier, Bob Vandenborg, and so he's setting up the funding structure and getting a team together.
Good. Good.
And we got, I think, what, $200,000 this year to initiate the study. I went back and looked at the supplemental buy-off. It says initiate a study in 2010 to be completed by December 2012. And so what I expect we'll do is, as soon as he gets his team assembled, we'll schedule. They'll draft their project management plan, but then we'll assemble a special featherweight to go over the scope of what we're doing and get ideas, people's thoughts on what alternatives we should be looking at.
I think it's
for what?
For pit tag detection for adult salmon passing through the Dallas Dam.
And John Day. One or the other of all this how we're doing it.
Yeah, we need to talk about that, but I think the Dallas is pretty much a no-brainer, so that shouldn't be that hard to do. We've already been out there and looked at it a couple of times.
What's the objective of this study?
The objective of this study is an engineering design study to look at cost-effective alternatives for getting help with the detection of the Dallas and/or John Day Dam. And so, what we'll really need from you all, I think, is kind of the detection efficiency goals, because that's going to drive cost of the design.
It's going to be the same as we're seeing at the other dams.
So
it's close to 100%.
Close to
100%. Yes. That's, I can answer that right now.
Seems like there's a pretty reasonable option.
I think so.
Yeah. Shouldn't be too tricky.
I don't think so. I think there's some good alternatives.
So the way it's written up in the agreement is we'll do the study this year, then we'll convene with the agencies and look at, is this the right tool for answering the questions in the bio and decide to construct or not. So kind of the way we're scoping it now is it's not, he's setting up the project, so we'll be prepared to jump into construction, but it's not in our kind of our charter for the project right now.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure we're moving down the track, so I didn't see it on the agenda earlier.
It's just taken, we're short on PMs, plus we've been, you know, for the CR, we've been holding back some projects that weren't time sensitive. So we see what we get, you know, we're too far out there and everything.
That's going to be a huge benefit for estimating that some of the states that I should take that on.
Good, if they just had to do a lot of fallback and, you know, overshoots and, you know, those kind of things. I mean, it's detections at the dam.
Come on, Mike. More data is always better.
What's that?
More data is always better.
I think tributaries are still the smarter way to go. Turn off and then.
A lot of tributaries. Ooh. That's a lot of work.
You were putting a tenant in a tributary?
Yeah, we've got one in John Day River. I think the Dells wouldn't be that hard on the lake side.
Yeah, but Bonneville Pool's got a lot of. I mean, that's, we're trying to partition out that loss, so we don't need to debate that here. I mean, that's already been debated for the buy-off. It's already in there. It's just a matter of getting it done.
Is there a protect fund up there?
Hmm?
Is there a
protect
fund up there?
Quit that. Surely you jest.
We're not going to carry that.
You know, I bet someone can develop a protect
fund. That's that a good idea.
I want to do that.
That reminds me. I talked to Cluxton. I think earlier this week, and about setting up a special SRWG to talk about the pit plan. I don't have that.
How many hours did you talk to?
Right now, my focus has been on something else a lot. But so I'll.
Yeah, it's still on, but his phone's probably on forward now.
So I'll get something out. After I talk to Dave some more.
Yeah. yesterday.
I should have wanted me to know.
Okay. So anything else on the pit detectors? Adult pit detectors? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Move on to the lamprey program.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to introduce Brett Welton. He is the mechanical engineer on Bonneville, Washington Shores Gravity Flow. And before I go into the presentation, what I'm going to do is just go through the update for my jobs and then we'll then if you have any questions, bigger picture, then we can go through that. Okay, so for lamprey, we had a tribal meeting the 11th, and that went well. We're starting to talk about FY12 budget needs. And we'll do some more discussions about that in the next meetings. In our next meeting, we're actually headed to Erdick to look at the McNary boxes. They're trying to see if there's implementability throughout the system. Because it would be easier for us to do those than what we're trying to do it on the Washington Shores, which is a major flume. We do the entrance cheaper, time less time consuming. So that's the reason we're headed down to look at.
So you guys are going down the 11th, too?
The 11th, good. Right.
A bunch of people there.
I don't know who has been invited. I don't track that well. I mean, I think one might have told you, but I'm not sure.
It's an agency trip. So okay. Anybody who wants to go can go.
Okay.
Wall's coordinating. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Derek Breyer would be the contact for at least for them.
Okay.
Hmm? So... Sorry, is anyone going to be here for FPOM that week then? Or should we possibly
reschedule?
Well, as long as the important people are there. Okay.
I'll be there.
All right.
I'm going to double down.
I guess I'm going to be down there for 3 weeks. So
nice.
Living there. I'm moving in.
Oh,
so you'll
be down there? Right?
It's a big bird migration.
Yeah, I was going to say April 11th.
If I could kick your knee from here, I would.
You guys going to say, wait.
Fight that wheel.
How did you breathe? How did you start a sore?
Okay, anyway. So then our next regular bi-monthly meeting is going to be right after the SAT meeting. So we're trying to coordinate it so that if the tribal folks are in Portland in any way, we try to do our bi-monthly the next day so they don't have to travel twice. So we try to travel the whole ball. So anyway, but then after that, I've been trying to chat with Bob Heine. He declined all of my advanced meeting requests. I don't know. So all of these dates are now mixed. So I'm sorry I didn't have time to change this, but it's an influx. So the next item is the trash rake. Oh, sure.
I'm sorry, Alan. What's this? So does that include? Oh, never mind. Wrong year. I saw 324, but I didn't see the year. Never mind.
Oh, okay.
That was last year.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay, so the Bonneville trash rake, they're still requesting a PM. There's been an official request made. I'm just trying to carry the group to, you know, they're trying to research things, they're trying to talk to contractors or supply people, and I'm just trying to help them do that at this point, but I'm not officially signed to it, so I'm just trying to kind of take a hands off. I don't have the money or, you know, and I don't have scheduled budget authority, so I'm just letting you know that it's in flux also. Are there any questions about bigger picture?
I can give you just a little bit of an update on the trash rake because I'm working with the riggers out at Bonneville Dam and we're putting together a paper prioritizing all the trash rakes for the project and why they're being prioritized that way and some general cost information. One of the riggers out there has been very active in trying to get automated trash rakes.
So he's going to be on the team when they get a PM.
Yeah,
the team pulling together, right?
I hope so.
Is it Brian?
Yes. Brian Smith, yeah.
Sure. Yes.
He's been really proactive.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is B2 a priority?
Well, his focus, because the fish units are so much deeper, there is a company that could have a rake that will reach that far, but they don't expect it to be available until 2012. So we've also been looking at automated rakes at the other intakes. for the AWSs. And if we do that, we have to modify some of those trash racks. And if we're going to modify the trash racks, we kind of need to decide, now would be a good time. Are we going to go to 3/4 inch for lamprey? And then we can modify diffusers later. So that's kind of the question out there. Do you, if we're modifying the trash racks anyway, do you want to go to 3/4 inch, or shall we just stick with the 1 inch and modify
as
we
need all to? The other trash racks other than B2, or is that going to be
That's going to be expensive, but it's good to grease the skids on it.
Yeah, that's good to know and know your priorities and stuff.
Well, that's why we'll put it all together in a paper and lay it out, and people can look at it.
I think the intent of this project is specific to B2.
It is. And we acknowledge that, but since we're already going through looking at everything, we'll just put it all together.
You were saying that the intake rates and things like that would be an O&M focused cost.
Why would you not?
Where this would be more CRFN centric.
Right.
We don't know that.
We don't know. All we'll do is get the information together and allow everybody to see what we can do right now with the equipment that's available.
Where do you envision this discussion?
Well, once we have something on paper, I will schedule it.
Well, I'm saying, are you talking special Fitterwig, special
I think
if we get a PM, Fitterwig or FPOM, I don't care.
If you put this paper together, I don't know why you wouldn't go through FPOM operations as leading that.
It's FPOM.
Get it out there.
It's only because you guys don't want to deal with it anymore.
No, we do. I just got to give you something to do. I'll give you more comments. Partly the trash rake, part of my issue too. I'm supposed to write charters for all these new projects, and the trash rake is an old one, but they want a new charter now, so I got to jump through that hoop to get the
trash rake.
But there isn't a
PM. There's a whole top.
Okay, any more questions on bigger picture lamprey boards? Okay, so adult studies, the only thing that I have on my plate is trying to figure out kind of where we're at with the Dell Sluiceway operation, making that permanent, you know, we're talking about benefits and reduce our costs. So I'm really not clear. I know we had agreement to run for March, and that's what we're doing, but Mike and I were chatting yesterday, and we're trying to figure out FY13 budgets. You know, we're not certain where we're at with all of this. So I don't know if we can talk about it today or...
Well, I mean, if the credit was, the credits are accrued over the biop, not over 1 year.
Right.
So the idea was to buy that for a period of time. I don't know if we've had that discussion to seal that deal or not.
We had that discussion with Sean, at least, and we said that we were comfortable with the operation, at least through the 2013 check-in and the buyout.
Right, yeah.
And then kind of weigh that against our other CALP options to see if it still makes sense.
That's true, as long as we're...
So as far as research, we have an adult SRWG, I assume, coming up. Do you guys foresee doing additional studies on this in the lower river that we should be planning for? I think that's your question.
I think we still have questions on the Bonneville part of this.
Oh, Bonneville, definitely. You're talking to Dalzell, right?
Well, I'm talking to Dalzell.
Is part of it, but I think we're talking adult studies budget, and so I think it's...
Well, I have concerns about, and maybe I'll have to put those in writing since I won't be there, but I have concerns about the B2 priority issues, so that's just, and it comes down to efficiency and then predation rates for tail race. I've said this before a couple times. I was out there on Friday and we were running about 2 feet of water over the gate, and that just didn't look good at all. And that's not Bonneville's issue, it's the Dalles tailwater restraint for the gates, and you know, that's just this year, but it does illustrate the fact that that can happen other years too, and when you only have about that much water, I can't imagine the counts are really using that as effectively as they might if it was, you know, 5 feet or
whatever.
Well, yeah, what happened was the Dalles tailwater had a hard constraint for the gate construction stuff at the NABLOC, so it pushed our four bay down to 72.5, which is way below where we normally operate. Yeah. So the gates are bottomed out. There's only a certain amount of water coming through there. So, I mean, operational constraints made it to where we bottomed the gates out, but there's just not much water.
No, they were bottomed out, but, I mean, that's still, the fact was that there's only a couple of feet of water. It didn't look
good. And to say that that's a good operation to pass Kelts, you can't say that.
I think there was six inches over one of the gates.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's,
yeah, I don't think so. I think they'll avoid it.
So on the Bonneville part of this, then, I mean, we were still viewing this as an annual discussion until we get more information.
Right.
Okay, so we'll lay that out.
I think that's where the only place I see the more need needed work.
Yes, it's the Delta.
We're good.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Dennis already briefed you on the B2, B1 sluiceway fish releases, so I won't go into that. Any other questions on adult studies for salmon? John Day North, so I appreciate you letting us get back into the ladder for the fish exit. I wasn't even here. I didn't know that leak until I got back, and then it was this big, you know, 50 new nails and creases situation. So hopefully we'll get it this time. It was a slow leak. So Gary said, yes, we got it. And I said, you can be better. Because Gary's not going to be happy with me.
No,
that
I've
better wake at all.
We've done it twice now. Two years in a row, we've had problems there. So I had to dewater the ladder for it. So hopefully that won't happen again.
Yeah.
I've got all the things fixed. And this is.
So thank you for being patient and flexible. We're really trying to get it fixed, and we're now just having some struggles. So, and we're also, just so you know, we're passing our lessons learned about Slade and onto Minto people. So, because you've got the same contractor on that job.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So for the entrance work, so we plan to have 90% plans and specs by April 4th. So I'll have Sean send out an official letter letting you know. We'll have opportunity to review that back to us. Okay. So we'd like to officially, and we haven't done any. I don't think Sean has done a form yet, and I don't even know if Sean brought this up at the last meeting, but we may be asking for more time in the in-water work period going into. Anyway, did he mention it? Okay, so
where's Tappy?
He's in Colorado.
So I really don't know how that discussion went. I can talk to Jamie and get minutes from last time to figure that out. Okay, so the tap is, they're still working on the punch list items. The pumps, we completed our model visit for the one-quarter scale model of the pump. And it looked pretty good. We had a vortex, but we kind of anticipated we'd have vortex and some sort. Steve Flinker looked at it. He didn't think it was critical, so I have to go on his judgment that it's not a big deal. It looked like a very weak vortex. It didn't have a core. Couldn't see it going down. So I think it's a type 2. So anyway, I just want to flag you on that. Everything else went well. Let's see. They plan to start excavation in April for the electrical building. So we'll start seeing barge activity downstream of the NABLOC. So are there any questions for me on John Day North work?
I think one thing to point out, Natalie, is the issue with the pumps. The number of pumps we're putting in 12 is not the full complement. And we're looking to, if we have enough money in CRFM this year, we'll increase those numbers and pump as a priority. But if we don't, then I believe the ladder, the first year of operation, will still not be at full built criteria under those tailwinds.
Still better, still at 6 feet, though. It'll still be at 6 foot. It's just as good as we have been in the past, but not as good as the criteria.
We won't be able to take the higher flows if we get a really high pressure. I don't know. Steve was here to address the
because of the tailwater depths.
Yeah, the tailwater depth. So there will be some limitations, and like Mike said.
Will it be worse than it has been?
I can't answer that.
I'd like to have that answer.
Okay, worse than we've seen.
I thought when this was presented before that it was similar to what it has been. But
you don't?
Yeah. I wish Steve was here. He could answer that right off the cuff, but I can't. So, like Mike said, I'm going to be, I've been asking Mike for roughly $3 to $3.5 million to try to obligate pumps 5 and 6 and put it in the queue. I'm waiting until the very last minute. They would need to know June, July time frame. And, July is our fourth quarter. So, who knows? We'll just see how the obligations go for everybody else.
Covered for you.
Yeah.
You're done.
That's what I wanted to hear.
I'm covered, Avian. We're good.
Excellent.
Okay, so if there are no more questions for John, then I'll go back and do the presentation for Wanda Bill.
That's good.
Okay, so Wanda Bill.
Did you hear that?
Okay, so what we're doing is just providing you our gravity flow pipe system, where we're at, what it looks like, some of the details, and trying to get some input from you guys, make sure you guys are okay with it. Okay, so we wish we had this situation, but we don't. We have lots of lamprey all over the place, so we're working for this. So our gravity line is 380 feet long. It's a 36-inch pipe. And it starts at the downstream migrant channel. So that's already screened water. That was one of the criteria. We didn't want to have to rescreen through screening. And then you'll see it. I'll show you the alignment. But it has a trough and it goes to a pipeline. And then you'll see it. PLC will control the flow. So that's the electrical. So this is what it looks like. So this is the downstream migrant channel. Okay, so you're taking flow out up here, down, and then underneath the road, dive underneath the road, and after it appears, then it'll go through an abandoned room, and then hook up with the lamprey flow that we designed with the pumps. Okay, a little bit more here. And the blue line with the fuzziness is roughly 3 feet, so it kind of gives you a sense of how big it is.
Fuzzy, yeah.
Like the line is not quite 3 feet, but the fuzziness is.
It's in there somewhere. Switch your eyes.
The peach fuzz, yeah. Okay, so this is what it looks like if you're looking above, the kind of isometric view, how it will kind of come through the area. That's the... The upper area is the grassy knoll area you've probably seen at Bonneville. This is an electrical line, 13.8 kV tap.
So you have the pumps in this one, they're not going to be there, right?
They're not going to be there, right. And that's one of my last slides. You'll see the big red on them. But we have several, as you can see, we have several obstacles we have to try to go through around on your to try to get this line in. And we've got a utility survey out there sometime probably next 3 weeks or so to find where everything is, since it's all buried. Yeah, right. So anyway, that's a little bit complicating factor for us, but we're working through that. And we're trying to keep the cost down too, so. Okay, so this just shows you that we're pulling 60 CFS off the downstream migrant channel. And this shows you how we're coming out of the downstream migrant channel. That the counting station room is actually an old one, so don't panic. It's not the current one. It's an old abandoned one, and we're going underneath it.
So this is okay. That's the UMT count station. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're Brent, going under you that. Interesting. Okay.
That's all.
Brent, do you want to add anything to? You want to say anything about your trough or?
Is 2 feet wide, 5.5 feet deep there. Pipe connect up to the far end of it. Any water that, or any excess water after the trough is filled up, will spill over and continue on its old path, which will go down through the siphons and into the ERC and continue on down to the tailways down there where it exits down by the entrance to the fish ladder.
Yeah.
So the water is just taking a different path to get there.
Okay. Okay, so this is what it looks like out in the field, roughly, or will look like roughly. You know, consider, but Braden, you know, in this area, it's going to be down 20 feet. So, you know, you kind of have to have perspective that this is not what you'll see out there. The only place that it could potentially be seen is like right in here.
Yeah, I think we should follow it. A lot of those fences out there.
Okay. And then this is where it's going to connect onto the piers. Come through the roadway. The roadway's up here. And here and comes underneath, connects to the piers to this there's an abandoned building here. And then it comes through, connects with the flume, but it'll have to be scaled down from 36 inches to 18 inches. That's what the flume is. This, the pump is now gone. All the stuff is not going to be
How big
be
a
there.
Line are you taking over there? You take this is going to be a 30
six-inch line to this point?
Yeah, and that was
have
those
trays. But full, full then? You just ran a partial full?
It was full at this point. Down to the valve, it would be pressurized. And at this point here, water accelerating would down have vents to take care of things. But
right.
The 36-inch pipe will step down, downsize after each of the vertical risers.
So you've got pressure relief all through there.
Right.
And so after each of those three, it'll step down until we're matched up with the previously designed horizontal supply header there.
Okay, so it's basically going to be just full, a full one, full pipe flow.
Full pipe flow. Yeah. So
just
to okay, I'll let me go back to the one drawing that we had, so you can see the 50-foot.
Oh, the hammer. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, too. It's going to be a real interesting.
Okay, so on this plot, the dark lines here, the dashed dark lines, we know that you have a constraint that we can't work within 50 feet of the ladder. So that's this and this. So we're trying to give our contractors as much time to do as much work as possible. So
you're going to excavate that all the way up, back up there?
Right. This I think it's like this piece that's above ground, but the rest of this is like
so you'll excavate the
right. So when we're planning
the grassy knoll.
Yeah. So what we're thinking about trying to do is award the contract in June. And I put this on the next slide, that June 2012, so that we give the contractor enough time to fabricate the plume. So while he's fabricating, we'll be digging, but we know that you have the 50-foot constraint, so we don't know if there's any flexibility on that. If we could only do this piece, then we probably wouldn't go in and start excavating just out of our notice to proceed. They would start during the winter work period, because that's just not going to be feasible, we don't think. But, so I didn't know if there's any flexibility on that or not.
I don't know what they're going to be doing, but when?
Excavating.
Well, what kind of noise and,
yeah.
And what time of the year?
We think it's going to be between 80 and 100 decibels.
What time? When?
So,
in July, August, September? No. Just no. No, absolutely not a good idea. At least not September or then late August. Maybe July.
Maybe.
So
July.
It wouldn't be a continuous thing.
If they wanted to, this is going to be 12.
It's in 12, right.
So if you want to get in and do that part like preseason.
Yeah.
That's
sure.
What we're thinking.
You could break it up.
Yeah.
Two in waters.
Well, could you do something like early? Because preseason for 12 is probably, as we've seen with the run sequence, getting later and later, so you might have some flexibility there. Probably you have to start and stop for a while.
We don't want anything going on there when there's sea lions in the tail race.
Okay. Well,
you heard that before?
Well, we didn't think that it was feasible, but we thought we'd chat with you to see what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, the height of the run is going to be in August, late August and September. That's just not a good time to be doing anything around there, regardless of sea lions.
So how much more expensive is this than the pumps? How much are we talking about? A lot?
We're
pretty significant.
Do you know the numbers?
We're still less than the cost of the pumps.
Yeah, I think we're like
the railing.
I was just thinking, we don't even know if this thing's going to work, and so if there's a cheaper way to prototype it first to see if it works before we cut through this and then have a system that doesn't collect lamp, right?
Yeah, I don't know how else we can
provide
water.
That's
the thing. If we don't have water in the flume, we can't see if the flume works. And I can't figure out any other way.
Well, if you have a water supply there, then you can use it to try other alternatives, too.
That will work. Fire hoses, whatever you need.
Fish free water, right.
Or for this fish unit, you can contract fish to an entrance.
Get North Wasco on this thing, they'll have a little unit on there. And there you go. put a bulb turbine in there.
So, this will have enough water to provide enough flow for both entrances, because you also want to do one. Okay.
Yeah, this provides all our flow.
That's a good way to do it.
We wanted 53, we're now at 60 to give ourselves a little bit of flexibility, so 53 CFS.
And I'm just saying, just God forbid, you ever find out that you may need more water, do you have flexibility in the system 2 years? Or you pretty much, I'm guessing the pressurized is pretty much there.
Yeah, I think.
Well, if you're going from 36 to 18, it seems to me there's potential at that point to change the size of from 18 to 24.
Yeah, the pipe is expected to be open channel flow.
Yeah.
And then somewhere between the road and the top, it will be going to hydraulic chunk and it'll be a full pipe.
Yeah. Pressurized at that point. But it sounds like you could actually supply more if you wanted to.
I think Steve's initial calculations indicated that we could get up to 64 CFS.
Mm-hmm.
The system, which is above the 53 that we need.
So a little bit more.
Yeah. So there is an extra.
I just think if you come down the road and you find this thing isn't working and you say, oh, you know, maybe have a little flow here or there, it might be useless to think about having some flexibility in the system. Because you don't want to do this twice.
No.
Or put pumps back in.
I wish we knew what we were doing with Lamprey. That's the problem.
Well,
this McNary thing will be a help too to see on entrance. Changes things, but you still have a conveyance to come. For me.
I'm trying to think down the road in case.
The more flexibility, the better, since we're not.
Well, we do have the flow control meter in that building, so sure. We could go. Yeah, I don't know how flexibly that would give us. I think it would give us a lot, actually, but only go down to go for, you know. I don't know how much pressure you could put on that. I don't know,
you
have to ask Steve to see if
there's a lot of water there.
I just don't know. I have to talk to Steve and see.
We have a lot of water, but not a lot of pressure.
No, there's not a lot of pressure.
We're starting at the top at Centerline Pipe, this is about elevation 57.5.
Yeah.
And then it comes across that depth at the end of building at 44. So you see we don't have a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking it'd be a lot more, but you're right, it's not that much.
No.
When you get to the bottom where your trough is.
That's
there's a band in the actuator room inside the lateral wall.
The new powerhouse has a band of rooms in it.
I'm like, okay, now I know.
Now you know?
That's where we keep the bats, because the mill frees up.
Gotcha.
Okay, so we're also anticipating that we're going to have it's going to be, and our water work there's are always temporary, so, you know, the time framing is, we're expecting some weather delays, possibly, so we're going to ask for probably officially to see if we can go back to November 15th, probably December 1st, back to November 15th for working our water work, so Sean will probably make the official request for them, letting you know that that's going to be coming. It will give us 15 more days in case we have weather delays to make sure. Because we don't want to take this to two seasons. We want to get this done at once since it's a good job. So, and the initial concerns with moving it back 15 days?
Look at it.
Okay.
What you intend to do matters. But yeah, that's a problem.
All that soil there is all fill material,
yeah,
which has been removed in the last few years.
It has.
The
bypass removed it. Yeah, we've seen it come and go several times. And add fences and more fences and more fences.
I asked around a little bit about the sound transmission through that fill soil.
Yeah.
And it was told that it should not be.
I think a lot of that stuff we did, the B2 pipe stuff, we just did at night or late in the day.
Yeah, that's
all some of the big
too.
Stuff closed.
Working off, off of PFAS.
That's what we agreed to in the past.
So we're most concerned about spraying with sea lions in the area once you get, and then about the peak passage, you know, a month and a half or so, September, late August.
So, is there a possibility that we could do some work in June, July? If there was any possibility that that would help the contractor?
Just a little bit. It's possible now.
Possible. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we just need to look at what it is.
Okay, so.
How noisy and where and when.
Okay. Okay, so when we submit for the official 15 days back November, we'll actually ask for June, July, see if, you know, whatever information you need to try to
figure out what you need for the project, and then lay out the exigencies, and we'll look at them. I mean, that's Sean knows.
Okay.
He needs to look at fish passage, and we have our diel. Our diel passage times are on the web, on Daylight's website. So.
Okay. Because I'm trying to, I don't know if the contractor would utilize it, but I'm trying to give them all opportunities to, because they're thinking it through, they're going to be thinking it better than I am.
Yeah.
If there's anything that they could think they could do in that time frame to prepare them to get done, then I'm going to try to give them as much flexibility as possible.
You will have to think about this. I mean, that's there. In the back of my mind, I have to keep remembering that we're talking about listed fish. We're talking about something that wasn't called for in the biological opinion, and I'm not sure how that goes. So I'm hoping we don't need a biological opinion for this.
Okay. Well, we can officially ask.
Would there be a way to monitor the ladder during that? Ladder and see if you start working and the fish bolt downstream. Or
not without radio tags or something like that. There's no way to look at it there. There are pit tag detectors above and below. You could look at fish dropping back out of it. Yeah, you could. There is your hard tag there in that particular ladder. There is
observing somewhere. From the observation standpoint.
I'm not going to want to go to a. What I don't want to do is say we'll wait and see what happens.
No,
if all the fish start backing out, then
no,
I don't want to go there.
Either,
this has to be benign. If this has an impact on listed stocks and you don't have a biological opinion coverage for this, then we have a problem. So keep that in mind.
I have a question on the screen size. DSM dewatering screens?
We're not screening.
So there's no screen? This isn't screen flow?
It already is screen flow.
It's coming through the DSM screens already.
Okay, so
it's
I'm just curious if there's any opportunity for any fish whatsoever, small or large, to get into this spot.
Probably not for this particular area. I don't.
Unless there's a screen set available.
Yeah, we've had some problems with fish getting into the auxiliary water supply, but that's coming from behind the VBSs.
That's a totally different area.
So I don't think this one, unless we have a problem with our primary dewatering screen, which I don't think we do.
The only thing I could say is this past, when the ERG trips, okay, the ERG could trip. And so
then the channel dumps into that area.
Well, yeah. And so if you're pulling water out of that area, is it past that or does it get put into that area?
It's before that. It's before, right? We're
so
not
directly from
that, right.
In the DSM when it gets dewatered,
mm-hmm.
you go through the streams, over the top of the weirs, and then into the siphons. So we're pulling off as it's falling over the weirs before it even gets to the ERC.
It should be fish free.
Okay.
Even if the ERG trips.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure someone thought through that. Okay.
Yeah, Steve has thought very carefully.
Oh, I'm sure he has.
My only concern is, and I think I've said this in the past, is that you need coverage if you expect any kind of impact on listed stocks. So this isn't called for in the biop, so it doesn't fall under take determination process or anything else. So if
you guys agree,
you have to have no effect.
If they did the work at night, okay, would they still have to have that? If they just said, we're not going to consider any work during the day.
You need a no effect determination.
Still.
You give us that.
Yeah.
You're the ones who will make that call and we'll agree or disagree.
Okay.
If we disagree, then we're into consultation and that's going to take years.
And why can't it be done during the winter, during the maintenance period?
It can. We're trying to give them more time, as much time
at least
as possible, 10. Because we only have December, January, November, three months to do all this work.
I mean, what I could see is a contractor want to come in and remove soil all the way down to the concrete wall and get that all pulled back and ready to start cutting through the wall as soon as.
Exactly. That's what I think.
Just some of that stuff, excavation work. And
what I said, that is important. You just have to make sure you can say no effect. You have to say that.
Yes.
You have to be able to, with a straight face, say no effect.
So Sean, Mike, and I can check.
Mm-hmm.
They have to convince you.
Then they have to convince me it's no effect, yeah. Or Trevor.
Well, I mean, if it doesn't, We can put it together. If it doesn't look like it's going to make it, we certainly don't have time to consult.
I know, we don't. So that's why I'm saying it has to be a no effect. We have to be able to make that determination. Want to make sure we don't get, you know, go down the road here and all of a sudden, oops, ESA is, because we're so used to just doing these things.
Yeah.
Because they're for salmon, but in this case, when it's for lamprey, it's not covered. Until Dave writes that lamprey buy up, and then you're, and then he and I can argue.
Okay, and then the last slide was just to let you know roughly the schedule. Are there any other questions about this work that Brent or I can answer for you? So you wanted me to follow up with Steve about the pump, how much flow.
So when and where will we meet criteria? This criteria with just the three pumps, right?
You mean for John Day?
Yeah, for John Day.
Four pumps. We'll have four pumps.
I had the impression when you were talking earlier about the McNary funnels that if those proved somewhat successful on the Irving trips, it would scuttle this whole Bonneville.
Oh, no.
I don't think that you can apply one to the other very easily.
I just wanted to make sure that's not.
I've looked at both pretty carefully, and it's there's some thoughts there. But
yeah.
The benefit of the. What's different in McNary compared to Bonneville is that they can't be water. So anything they do has to just be able to pop in place and divert connected. And
right.
We don't have that same constraint here in Bonneville. Plus, we couldn't just throw something in there and wing it. And, you know, not with it. We have like 16 feet.
That's the problem there.
But the advantage could be that if it works well at McNary, it could work well at Ice Harbor, and it could work, at the other Snake River dams.
Bonneville's just different.
Bonneville's different.
Right. I just want to make sure that's not what you're thinking.
Okay.
This fits into the duty watering plan.
Okay.
Power off too.
No, not yet.
The schedule? Yes.
It's next year will be B1, and then the
trash rank
12-13, it'll be...
So 11-12 is B1, 12-13
is B2. Which one?
The trash rank.
Tammy
did the trash
rank. I already updated you all. Were you not listening?
That's what I'm saying. Schmoosh Kids.
I can give you a quick update. At the last FPOM, there was some question about operation of the B1 sluice gates. Early in the season, the task groups, the PDT that was put in place to help finalize getting the sluice gates working like they should, working in automatic, that kind of thing. There was some repairs made to the gates with seals and things like that. Those repairs have been done. They've been put back in service. There was a question about automatic operation.
They're in manual now.
They're in manual now because there's a problem with the interface with the transducers, and it's speaking with the PLC in the control room. We've got the electrician working with the project. We may have to replace a couple components inside the control room. But Matt Hansen and I met. We met with the project. Scott, the person that's from the district rep is working with the project. So I would say in the next couple of weeks that's going to be fixed.
Good. Okay. Great.
So really, other than just making sure that we're maintaining operation system, we will be able to put it in auto mode, put it back in auto mode. These are some of the bugs we kind of figured out we would have in the beginning, but structurally, mechanically, operationally, those gates are going to work how they're supposed to work in a couple of weeks. Forever.
And they're going to have a nice
and then location. And then we'll have a marker, an indication arm on the sluice gates so Gary can look down there and say how much water's coming over the top of
it. Thank you.
I think 8 and a half for his phone. So he's looking at
Yeah, I like that.
So he can look on his phone.
So I won't have to go out there. So the riggers, the riggers are going to be installing those come Monday in combination with the sluiceway closure for the trolley pipe move.
You can hook it into my computer at work. That'd be fine.
All in the name of better passage through Carl's one.
I like it.
Did you figure out that head differential issue that we were seeing up there with the traveling screens or intake screens, basically? Remember that? There's supposed to be like a 0.4 differential, and we were seeing like 7.5 feet.
Oh, on the VBSs.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's, there were some problems. There were some broken transducers. The differential between
the
one side and the other side of VBS and powerhouse 2, right?
Yeah.
VBS differentials were way high, and several were broken.
They might have
apparently
not
broken.
Been in calibration. I don't know.
There's more than that to it. I mean, it was like 1.8 feet of. No, 7.5
feet. There was like
5 feet.
To 8 feet.
8 feet of.
Which couldn't be right, right? I mean,
no. You got 8 feet of head on that thing. You're going to blow those things out.
They would have failed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there were several that were alarming. Yeah, that's kind of an O&M thing. Well, maybe it could be a follow on thing, too, because that's supposed to work.
Were you reading them properly?
What?
I don't even think the indicators go up to 7 feet.
No, they,
it was electronic.
They were saying, yeah, I wrote it down. I mean, some were just XXXXX, but...
The picture that shows, it has the little reading.
I don't look at that. I look at the actual, we go from VBS to VBS.
Yeah,
and look at the differential, which should be the same. If they're not, then there's something screwed with the system. That system needs to be recalibrated or whatever, I don't know, but it's not one area.
So we can make a note, we'll talk to the project about DBS sensor calibration.
I told Andy about it. He knows about it out there.
Andy? Well,
yeah.
Oh, the bio.
Not the bride.
Yeah. No.
Trailer.
Is that it?
Back to you.
Okay, well, I think we're done.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Next meeting?
Yeah, next federal week. We had that on the schedule, but I think we had it for like...
It's June 2nd.
June 2nd?
The Walla Walla Fitterwig is May 4th and 5th. So going back to the every 2 months and the first Thursday of every 2 months puts us at June 2nd.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll schedule a third. They try to always.
Yes, they do
try to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I need a short break. I got to get the
little boy here. We'll sharpen our sticks. Okay. Be ready for you to.
10 minutes. Just want yourself in the highway.
Yeah. Our simple guy. Yeah. Oops. Yeah.
So I can work on the sturgeon every job.
So are you here to tell us don't worry, be happy?
Be happy while you're worrying or something.
Uh-huh. There's a lot of people worrying.
Yeah. It's a huge study, though. I mean,
it's a very, very expensive study.
Yes.
There's a lot regionally, so everybody...
I'm feeling better. You know, if we had done the 3-dam study the first year, I slept a little the first time with just 1-dam, but now with that under our belt and having worked...
Yeah, it worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's been such a... discussion about this, you know, the 30 versus 40.
Yes.
Everybody's keyed in on that, and now everybody's thinking about that.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Yeah, I would have hoped, you know, when you got to this point, you would have made it someone would make a decision in terms of what's the optimal operating condition, and then you just test that. You know?
Right, that was the idea. But we got wrapped around the axle. I thought, you know, the Corps' response was, okay, we'll do both. Was a good response because it took away the argument of which one. But now,
at least for a moment, yeah.
Yeah, for a moment. But now we're in a discussion of, well, how do you do that? And then once you've done it, what do you do with the results?
I know. I'm so glad I just presented the results so you guys have to make decisions, because you can imagine, you know, because they're both cool down, no problem. Or, you know, there's a problem, but right. You at least know the decision.
You know the decision, yeah.
If one's up and one's down, okay, if they both go up, I'm going to stay away.
That's going to be, well, you know what's going to happen. I can tell you now, the results, I think, is that we're going to make it okay, you know, the standards at the 40%, but we're not going to get a 30% test because the flows are going to come off the hill so high that it's going to be something like 37.
Guess we'll never be able to
37 versus 40, and everybody's going to go, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? We didn't make it.
Yes, yeah. We've seen that before. You know, it's very hard to control those.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Levels, yeah. We saw it in 08. You know, we got a year like that. This year is looking a lot like 08. So 08, I think we got like half the blocks were, you know, we didn't beat 30. So.
Yeah.
So we're seeing that that can happen again.
It's the vagaries of God and Mother Nature.
It is, yeah. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it, but when you're in this
I think that's a pretty good scenario, you know. Yeah, I can see that happening, yeah.
The way it's coming off the hill, the way we've... Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. So at the end of it all, then, what do you say? Well, if you made it at 40,
just operate at 40, yeah.
Yeah, you're done. They're going to say you missed it because you didn't do 30. So you got to go back and start over.
Mm-hmm. I'll be here for a while.
But that's really got nothing to do with the study design. That's how you interpret the results.
Yeah, exactly. As long as we give, as long as we give you good numbers, that's all I'm happy with.
Then we can make your decisions on that. Yeah, my concern is going to be more along the lines of how these control groups. You know, basically, we've got two control groups. Mm-hmm. Well, no, we have one control group, basically. And we have two treatment groups, so we're going to make that one control group play both treatments. And if you figure that they're homogenous and that you can lump them, then that's good. But that's an assumption.
Yeah.
And so you should test that assumption.
We'll talk about that.
That's all on
the list. Okay. That's a pretty good shape. Let me explain. Yeah.
Done that, I don't see the difference between this and any other study that we do. I mean, there's going to be people that have issues about the R or the R3 with this group.
I brought that up when we first talked about the two treatments. Well, you know, as soon as you put two up there, someone's going to want for two down there.
That was your study.
Yes.
Because I tried not to do that.
Yeah.
I understand that. I don't want to take a fish or anything. So, you know, I'm on board with trying to do it, but I just want to make sure that you're on board with the stats.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we've got a couple, three ways to Sunday to check on that.
Yeah, I think there is two. As long as we got those in the design, then I don't have a problem at all with the approach. So, but that's only me. There's a couple other people who
Good. If we can discuss that, get that result.
I don't think there's any.
Yeah.
So I mean,
all you can do is help reasonably reasonable.
Exactly. Stick to your guns.
Oh, I brought it for Brad. You know, well, you know, he's always looking for the next boondoggle.
Yeah. Sort of like a class. You say most students, but there's one or two that.
But.
I feel sorry. Oh, God, French. High school. That was the longest year in high school of my life.
Yeah, I did that too. French class. Your high school. I got to remember that.
I took 2 or 3 years of
it. Oh, you did?
Did you like it?
Oh. I didn't like it. You had to have a language.
You know, it's funny. My career was influenced by high school. I hated French. It's terrible. I just got through less than my skin of my teeth. So when I went to grad school, I knew that it was possible. But Cornell University in biometrics had it as a language requirement, English, of all things. I mean, to take an English exam. I said, I can work on this one. Yes, I can do this one. So I ended up going to an Ivy League school because they had the easiest language requirement.
That's great. Better luck than good, huh?
Yes. Couldn't you think? I mean,
that is interesting. Yeah, I can do fine. I always have good grades in English. Yeah. Not French.
I guess they, well, historically, that field had a lot of foreign students, so they wanted to make sure the foreign students were in the chaplain. And so it was a shoo-in, but it influenced my whole life. God, that was one bad year.
Computer science was my bad.
They just look right brain kind of things, you know. You're good at one part, yeah, not the other.
Right. Yeah. I was not good. My instructor wasn't too good either. I barely spoke English, like India or something like that, or Pakistan. It was very hard to understand. We were trying to learn this obscure snowball.
Yeah. It's hard enough to learn it straight, and then you have to learn it through another language.
And then 20 times later, I'm building models and building computers.
Who's still on the phone? Or on the phone?
Yeah. Anyone? Mueller?
Anybody on the phone?
Someone rang in.
Nobody's on the phone?
Guess not. Okay, so we're going to study at the Lower Plum River Survival Study.
You are? Really?
Yes.
I've heard
of
that.
The original proposal.
It's
going to
hit you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You might take that.
Somebody gag him now.
The original study had us doing a single treatment at John Day, single treatment at the Dalles and at Bonneville. Because we couldn't come to an agreement on the operation for John Day, we proposed doing two treatments at John Day. We've changed the design per se. We're still using the same experimental design, the virtual paired release model. We've adjusted the number of fish, treatment fish, and we've the operation, obviously. I think that covers it. Now, there are some experimental design issues, and I think that's what everyone wants to talk about. I want to be clear that the purpose of the study is to estimate dam passage survival for both operations. This is not proposed as a treatment test. There's no hypothesis. There's no comparison. There's no test outside of the dam passage survival. Study objectives then are to estimate dam passage survival at both operations, to do the other metrics that are laid out in the accords, forebay to tailrace survival, SPE, forebay tailrace residence times, and that's true of all three of the dams, but at John Day, then for both operations. Study design, as I said, we're gonna do the virtual, use the virtual paired release model. If somebody wants to see a schematic of that, or else pass these out. This is what this looks like. Now, the first page with all three dams on it is how the study was originally proposed.
This is the same as what was originally proposed and reviewed by the ISRP.
That's right, back in the 2009.
Yes. And then for John Day, this is what we're proposing for doing both operations. So any questions on that?
One quick question.
From anybody but Tom.
Excellent.
Okay, well, yeah, I do have some.
just one thing. In the course, we talked about doing BRC to BRC. Would it be possible, since we're doing three dams in a row, to do a BRC from John Day down to Bonneville to do this whole reach?
Sure.
That would be interesting, because that would give us opportunities to compare to other sources of survival records. I can see how it's all working out.
Compared to the pit reach?
Yeah. You can think of the pit reach, because right now, doing BRC reach, you can't really compare. It's just a nice way to double check to see are two methods that we're using
as not fish.
Survival from the four bay entrance line to the
Bonneville.
So it's lumping all of those.
You're losing fish.
One long reach survival from John Day 4 Bay?
Sure. John Day Forbay to Bonneville Tail Race.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get that. You can calculate that. Yes. Of course, one thing with the John Day Tail Race is that you're going to have false positives due to potentially dead fish going through the dam. That's why we don't use the tail race as a primary detection site, because of dead fish with live tags, even false positives.
You could put a piece together, though. That was another option.
Just go to
if you want BRZ and BRZ, that's not the same reach as the estimate.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, could you get it so it'd be the same?
Yeah, you just go to Bonneville Dam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought those pit reach survivals have been kind of shaky before in that reach anyway.
Steelhead, yes.
That's because of the detections. Yeah. Oh, okay, but you're true. That's right. You still have that white air balance on the detections for pits.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't have with this. This would be a much tighter. But it ought to fall in the middle of that somewhere.
What, the pit tag?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I trust those things. You've seen 80 at one dam and 120 at another for the last couple of years. And this is my chance alone. I think there's something going on bad there. Yeah, I wouldn't trust those pits down there. In fact, we're going to be investigating that to see what's going on. I mean, we'll calculate the numbers, but I'm not quite sure.
The data is there to do it. Yeah.
What I'm wondering about is if you're talking about the fish released to John Day following that particular group all the way down, which is what you're doing, by the time you've lost enough groups before you get to Bonneville, do you have enough left at Bonneville to give you any precision whatsoever? I mean, it's going to be...
Well, there's
it's the same problem. You start getting wider and wider.
3,000 per species being released above John Day.
Right.
So...
Is that enough? I mean, that's to get the precision that you want.
With 100%, with near 100% detection, I don't know what it would be.
It can't be the same as what you're getting in the tail race of John Day. So it's got to be something, a couple of, maybe not orders of magnitude, but certainly maybe less. Yeah, maybe a plus or minus 6 or plus or minus.
Well, the detection plus or minus huge, so.
Can you use?
So what are you after here?
I'm just trying to say it's
two huge.
But if they both are in the same ballpark, you've got some comfort.
You should be able to tell that.
It helps address some of the concerns people bring up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You are doing that.
I'm trying to help them.
Not for that reach he's talking about.
Okay.
We're all going to get scrutinized.
Okay.
You're doing a good job. Keep it up.
Actually, we could do that with 2010.
Yeah. I mean, you can cut this thing up any way you want to. It's just that you lose some precision as you do it.
Tom, I think it seems like since these fish are double tagged, you could essentially get the same estimate for the same reach that the pit tags are coming up with. And in the last couple of years, precision has been pretty good for the pit. I think last year the Falcon report had a standard error of 3%. But since these fish are double tagged, the pit survivals are defined from the tail race to the tail race.
Yeah.
So but you could use those double tagged fish and the pit detections at John Day and Bonneville, and then take advantage of the JSATs arrays downstream of Bonneville to get that lambda and take advantage of that high detection probabilities, and get it seems feasible to get the exact same reach defined in exactly the same way with the two different tag types. And it seems like that would be a good check to see how well the double tag fish are the survival that they're generating is similar or dissimilar from the pit estimates.
That's exactly how we did that mistake.
That's how we did the tag effects.
Don't you still have the false positive issue there for the?
You're using the pits and those.
Why not? No, they're not. But
bypass system.
But the acoustic for the tail race.
The acoustic tags, even the lifetime, it doesn't appear to be an issue.
No, I'm not worried about that.
Because you'd only be using the acoustic rays downstream of Bonneville to get an estimate of lambda, which is all that important.
You would use the detection arrays to get your detection probabilities for Bonneville.
For John Day.
No,
but you've got a paired reference, too, so you can back it up to the reference.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about using the pit detections at John Day and Bonneville,
right,
the same way that the pit detections are used for the pit tag fish.
Right.
They're using them the same way for the dual tag fish.
That's tail race to tail race.
Tail race to tail race.
But that's not what you have with acoustic.
And then, no, you can get.
But you can, but isn't there a false positive?
Well, no.
No?
Okay. I don't understand what the false positive is.
So he's just using the pit tag detections and bypasses of the corner collector. Now you're looking at the ignoring the detections until you get to below bottom.
Until you get to below bottom.
Oh, you're just doing pit to pit comparison, not acoustic comparison. I was still on acoustic comparison. Okay, I got it. No, that's, yeah. No.
I think, even though the sample size is 3,000 fish and relatively low detection probability at John Day and a little bit better at Bonneville for pit tag fish, by having such high detection probabilities downstream for the JSAS fish, we'll expect to get pretty good precision on that. Exactly the same.
Yeah, good point.
An important check, because just looking at the 2010 results for the JSAS, they're defined a little bit different. They're dam face to dam face. There's estimates of John Day dam face down to the Dallas Core Bay, and then estimates of the Dallas Core Bay down to the Bonneville face, halfway down to the Bonneville reservoir. On phase. And when I looked at those estimates, they were about 10% higher for Chinook, the JSAS fish, than the Faulkner estimates for that breach pit fish for Chinook. And they're about 5% higher for steelhead. But the breach is defined slightly different. The JSAS would include John Day passage,
the dam,
but not Bonneville passage, whereas the
pit, that's what I was concerned about.
Have Bonneville passage, but not Day, John Day.
John Day, right.
So there are some slight differences there, but it raises
still
some concern.
Same number of dams.
That there's a 10% higher survival rate for almost the same reach, slightly different. So I think it would be a very good idea to do what Tom mentioned earlier. Calculate the exact same reach using the two tag methodologies.
You don't want to use the same detection size so that the same biases exist. I was so real concerned that some biases down to the last two dams because of the, for me at least, because of the John Day corner collector so far down below the tail race. There's the mixing issues. When we designed the pit tank survival study, we never expected a dam like Bonneville. It was designed for like a lower granite, real quick mixing below, and so now you've got a very different kind of construct down there, and ever since the core clock has gone in, the survival, pit tank survivals have gone sort of flunky. Mm-hmm. So I suspect, very seriously, there's some model violations going on there. Mm-hmm. So you'd want to at least use the same detection size for both groups so that the same biases
exist.
Expressed.
The bypass is way downstream too. Miles.
Yeah, no, it's just a strange way to, for the purpose of the pit tag system where you're supposed to have below dam tail race mixing, the routes are different. We seem to, the JSAT data also suggests those fish going through the JPS have much lower survival. We're finding right now with the JSAT data, which is a violation, is there's route post detection and bypass detection. I'm very concerned, because what happens is, if you get a flunky estimate 1 year, that could be a life, vagaries of nature, and what happens too is the two reaches are inversely correlated, so one goes high, one goes negative. When we see it year after year after year at the same pattern, sooner or later it ain't just chance. And I'm pretty convinced now with seeing some of the JSAT data and raw specific information, there may be some issues there. So I'm just saying, it may not be the best gold standard, maybe the gold-plated standard down there. And if you want to do comparison, at least use the same detection so the same biases are expressed. And we can try to do that, but then you're back to small sample sizes.
So where would you have to move the detection array to do that?
For the PIT tag detector? I'm sorry.
Well, for the JSATs.
What we did on the tag effect study is because we didn't want to have, you know, we did, there were 20,000 PIT tag fish, and we did, I don't know, it was 4,000 or 5,000 acoustic tag fish in the spring, because we didn't want to have to do 20,000 acoustic tag fish. We used acoustic detections below McNary to estimate detection probabilities on the PIT tag at McNary.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, we were able to keep a smaller sample size.
That's just what Steve was saying. When you got a below monocle, then you get monocle detection efficiency and you get your calculation. And it's a surrogate for the PIT trawl, but it's, you know, much higher detection efficiency, so you can get part of less fish than with the PIT tags. But we have. So this, the purpose of this would be to look at tag effects. Is that the concern?
Yeah.
Because there's also, in the study design, you have another method of looking at tag effects.
Is that why you wanted to?
That's part of it.
Okay. The other part of it.
Why do I have to do
that?
I mean, the only question we had is, one of the questions, talking with people, that kind of stuff, is the R2B release right now, and looking at the hydraulic extent model that we have, the R2B release detection rates roughly, I can't remember, what is it? River mile 346?
Yeah.
Kilometer, actually. And that's, if my memory serves, not that far from some of the island areas, that kind of stuff.
It's downstream of the, what's the name of the island? Whatever that island is in the middle of the.
I can't remember.
Below John Day.
The Dredge Doyle Island.
Below John Day.
Yeah.
Miller Island.
Oh, Miller Island.
No, it's not Miller. Oh,
he's talking about the Dredge Doyle.
Right out off of
Dredge Doyle
Park. Is
right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's downstream of that. So that's where that. That's where all the flows come back together.
Exactly. So, I don't know, well, that makes sense from a project standpoint. The question we have is, one of the key ideas in the performance methodology, we've gone through review and that stuff, and so now actually we're getting data and we're starting to see stuff, so we can actually do a better job of doing analysis, see if there's holes or where we can plug for things. One thing we're wondering is, one of the big assumptions is that S2 and S3 have similar handling effects and are going to experience similar mortalities, correct?
Those are both tagged at the same time.
Yep.
Those are our fresh tagged fish.
Yep.
And so yes, that is the assumption.
So I mean, one of the things we're wondering is we want to make sure there's no site-specific differentials expressed at one as expressed at the other. And if that one of the S2 being in the right where it is, you're probably going to have a different predation base there than you would at saliva. Just from location, that kind of stuff. What we're trying to do is there any way to verify that to see if that's a problem that would be expressed or not expressed? And that's part of the reason to look at PIT tags that might get you at taking a look at that. Like, yes, R2 is expressing something more than R3, more than one would expect, because if you have fresh fish, you're going to want them to be kind of experiencing similar predations you would expect. Because fresh fish is. You're going to have all your handling effects, which you hope are going to be canceled out by R2 and R3. Now, are these handling effects going to be exacerbated by possibly an experience into a higher thing? There's a gull colony that's O right there. And if you look at some of all the pike minnow precipitous data, most of those kind of pike minnows, that kind of stuff, are going to be most heavily in the BRZ. And as you move farther down the river, they decrease. And also, if you look at proposal work, most of them prediction from submarines are going to be near shore. Salilo is a very advantageous position where you're not going to see a lot of avians, and there aren't going to be a lot of predator fish hanging out in the deep, dark reservoir there because there's just not a very advantageous place from an energy standpoint for them to be. So I'm just trying to figure out, is there a way we can verify that's not a problem in the sea? Because if it does, it has the potential to bias your survival in a positive manner.
But the treatment fish
yep.
are exposed to that same...
But their handling effects should have all been gone by then.
Right, if there's a post-release period where those fish may have a greater susceptibility to predation, say, when they dump out of the bucket into the river, is there a period of an hour where they're disoriented slightly because they've been held between 20 and 40 hours? Is there potential for higher predation on those fish than fish that are dumped into the reservoir that may have lower predator density?
And the question is there a way we can look at that? Because it means, if that's not a problem, we're gold. But I just want to make sure that's not going to be something that gives me consternation.
Well, what is it you're looking at? I don't understand. What are your...
Is it a handling effect, potentially? Essentially, it could be a handling effect that is expressed in terms of predation. You can't really tease that out of the assumptions of the model directly because...
So you're concerned that the tail race releases in these R2 and R3 groups might be biased low because of some sort of handling effect.
Or differential.
If they're both biased low, if they both experience the same radiation, same handling,
well, that's the whole point.
They cancel out.
Exactly.
That's the whole point of this design is that the R2, R3 are both fresh release fish. Mm-hmm. Purposely, so that if there's any differential handling on them,
exactly.
They're both experiencing it.
Exactly. And this comes down to the one point we brought up a year and a half ago was where you release those fish is going to be very critical because.
Well, R2's choice was chosen because it's at the tail race BRZ at the mixing zone. It wasn't defined by some capriciousness of. Fish density, but based on hydrology.
You don't. I'm saying that's something we never anticipated, that kind of stuff.
What's your concern is that the R2 and R3 may have differential predation rates.
So they wouldn't mix. The mixing assumption. Because they're both going to go through the same zone.
Right? No, they won't.
No. R3 isn't going to be exposed to
whatever was between R2 and R3.
That's just the point. Right?
So if there's a lot of...
That's just the point.
As long as the mortality on the R2 fish is the same as what the virtual fish is the same. But
exactly.
The virtual fish are not recently released fish. They don't have that period of reorienting themselves to migration after being held for 28 to 40 hours. I mean, that's the thing about that R2 group. If they go into a high predation zone, that can be a post-handling effect. That it's just not going to show up until, it's going to show up as a lower survival rate, essentially.
But isn't an assumption of the study that once those fish are released, they're not experiencing any post-handling effects? Isn't that a major assumption that we're going with?
We're allowing both R2 and R3, if they have post-release effects,
to
be similar.
They're supposed to have the same handling effects, but if you take a fish and you pull it out of the river and you hold it put a bag in it, hold it for 28 to 40 hours, and then you release it. You're going to expect a period of time, I would think, that fish has to adapt back to its environment. Remember that it's a migratory fish and start moving. During that period of time of reorientation, it's in an area of higher predator density. It could have a heightened mortality rate or be more vulnerable to predation than a fish that's released.
So we are expecting there to be some vulnerability to these fish.
Sure, I mean, you would expect it, but if it's higher than the fish that are just passing through the project,
that's what the model designed to address, I thought.
I guess a couple.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's designed to address the handling effect if you put them in a similar environment in the sense of, it's not a handling effect.
Well, two things. First of all, your argument is like half empty glass. In other words, you could be releasing the fish in a less predator density, and you'd have the opposite effect. But so you don't know.
We do know from research that's been done on the distribution of predator fish that they're higher density in the tail race of the dams than they are in mid-reservoir.
Yeah. Furthermore, they do don't really spend a single point. You spread them all across the river, so it's not as if there's a, you dump all in there, you see, either all into a hot spot or a low spot. They're spread out across the river, so that, that minimizes any kind of, you know, chance effect of being in one condition versus another. So that's taken account, but you're just saying, basically, I'm only looking at the half-empty part of the glass. But no, it could be the other way, too. It could be accidentally put into a low predator zone by chance, and you get the opposite bias. So,
but the likelihood of that in this two different segments of the river, it's more likely close to the dam that you're putting them into a higher
predator. And it's really not close to the dam.
No,
it's closer to the dam.
It's below the island. And we put in autonomous nodes at that location as well. And I can tell you from putting in nodes there that the water is really moving. It's not like an eddy or a static area at 346 kilometers. It's that water is really moving. You would be hard pressed. In 2008, we had a reference release that was further downstream than that. It was adjacent to the boat ramp, and that was a lot more convenient because you could launch your boat and release the fish and get back out. It was easier for people that were releasing the fish. Now we have to drive about a kilometer upstream to release those fish, but the flow conditions are much the same. I would really have a hard time imagining predators hanging out in that area.
Well, any control group that you use or any test with a control is going to have the same problem. This study has the two controls because they're trying to adjust for some of the problems of release site and release condition. But every study you do has a control that's in this area. As a former pike minnow fisherman below John Day Dam, I can tell you that there's a lot more pike minnow up close to the dam there is down there below those islands.
Well, how many are going to be a saliva?
There's also the difference in the gull low too. Yeah, definitely low. Yeah, I don't think the gull. You know, that depends on if the gulls are moving up to John Day or not. If they're going to the Dalles, as to which way the
you know, that is. But nonetheless, you do see survivals over one, suggesting there's some.
That's what we're trying to address with the study. Yeah, that is the problem. You're right. That is.
The grass is creeping in there.
Yeah,
and this might be a.
Well, that over one issue, I mean, that assumes you have a lower control group survival than you did for your dam survival.
Seen that that's John Day.
Which is the point of the model.
Survival that's the point of the model, yeah. Because so of the handling effects.
For individual release?
John Day?
Yeah.
No, we haven't seen 100.
At Bonneville, yeah.
Yeah, lots.
No, but I mean for individual blocks in the data. You look at
for individual blocks, yeah, because your precision is so poor. That, you
know. In 2008, that's the case, but in 2008, we used a standard pair.
We were further up with the control group, too.
We were a little further up. So. Yeah.
You start getting up towards the outfall of the bypass system, you're going to have some problems with your control.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, but we're downstream of those islands. The flow's pretty laminar. That was the point of picking this stuff.
Don't say that amongst a bunch of engineers.
Approaching laminar.
It's smooth.
Smooth is better.
It's your Reynolds number. Don't worry. I was waiting for Gary to say it too. So.
It's, if you were going to pick a release site, that would be one that, if you were trying to pick one that wouldn't have predators located in it, you'd pick that site. It meets the criteria. It has flows that are sufficiently high and there's no structure or anything for them to hold. I'm not saying they're not there.
S2 or the R2 site.
That's the R2 site.
Yeah, and no, that's they're
if
there.
If you're going to make an adjustment, you could move it back down by the boat ramp to make some people's lives easier, and and
that's not our interest, though.
Making things easier.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to see those segments. If you look at those survivals segment by segment, mm-hmm. to see how
you
that
could do that.
Well, in 2000, the difference is maybe 100 meters, 200, might be 200 meters up toward the islands from the boat ramp. So the difference in those two locations is not a great distance.
How far from the dam?
Well, it's 346 is the closest, and the dam is the upstream face is 349 kilometers.
It's a couple of miles.
I know that. So, you know, it's a couple of kilometers.
It's more than that.
Maybe 3K. Well, not exactly 3K, because some of that's the...
I'd say it's about
upstream face of the dam is 349, and then the dam has some width.
Yeah.
So it's at least a couple of kilometers down.
What are the model assumptions on the expression and location of tagging and handling mortalities with various releases?
Tagging and handling mortality?
Because I keep on hearing references to that's what the model's assuming, and I include nothing in the list of 10 assumptions that.
Let's see. I think it was maybe two questions. In terms of tagging effects, I guess depending on how you define that. First, if you're meaning differential mortality among different fish tagged by different taggers, we look at that to make sure that there's no bad tagger in there so that they could potentially be biased to study. So we examine all the fish tagged by each tagger to see if there's any pattern of differential mortality, and we use analysis that looks at all the release locations that taggers tagged across the seas and across species to see if there's any kind of differential trend between one tagger and others. In other words, if one tagger typically tags fish that has a higher downstream survival than another, we look for that, because that could have a potential bias in the analysis. And potentially, if we found it, we'd pop that fish for those particular bad taggers. In terms of tagging effects, in terms of differential or delayed tagging effects, okay? The R1, if you look at the little graph here, and the R1 fish are fresh fish, and then when they hit the face of the dam, any dam, say John Day Dam, they form this what we call this virtual release group, which is fish that have arrived safely, nominally distributed in front of the dam, and they form basically the release group. Because we have to estimate survival from the face of the dam to the dam tail race. So the only way to get fish down to the face of the dam is to release them upstream far enough that they arrive typical of a run-of-river fish. So there might already be any kind of post-release handling effects could have been already expressed by those fish. They've been in the river for some number of kilometers, miles, days. So they're no longer virgins. I call them veteran fish, okay? So the problem is we can't just release fish a fresh fish, say, group at the tail race, because now we're comparing, pardon me, veterans with virgins. You got one group that's already had post-release expression, one that's not. So the reason for the double tail race release, the R2 and R3, is to estimate survival from the tail race to some point downstream. That downstream is where the line of the R3 is. The line where R3 is, it was assumed to be far enough downriver that there's no, first of all, false positive detections of fish dying at the dam,
making their way down,
and floating down and being falsely detected and assumed to be alive. So that's why it's far enough down there. But the problem is now far enough down, there's all below the tail race. So then the paired release, the R2 and R3, is released at the tail race and at that downstream R3 design to estimate that differential mortality there. Those are fresh fish, purposely for the purpose that they're going to be a pair to estimate that little reef survival, and we want them to be treated as similar as possible, so they're released the same day, differential by a few hours, fresh tag fish, so if there's a handling effect, they're both expressing it, so then when we take the pair, that handling effect's out, and then we compare that to the S1 group, which already has expressed it, we've gotten rid of the handling effects. Anything other than that, again, you never want to compare virgins to veterans, because you're going to have a bias one way or the other, depending on which one's the numerator and denominator. So basically, we're hoping that, summarize, if there's any post-detection also post-release hand mortality in the R1 that's been expressed, gotten out of the way by a timely form of the virtual release group. However, if Dell has had that opportunity, we can't compare it with a fresh release, so now we do a paired fresh release in the tail race, assuming the R2 and R3 may have it, but by then they're equally expressed by the time they're detected downstream at, say, at lower detection site. So we're allowing for post-detection handling mortality in that pair, and we're purposely pairing it for that purpose. Does that help?
Yes, I just think it'd be helpful to add those two assumptions that you are assuming.
I think in my bigger write-up, once upon a time, we had those in there in terms of explaining why we did this.
I've read through those. I've never seen it outlined that you are...
But yeah, that's the whole justification for...
I recognize that, but...
Yeah, if you just did this design...
We hear these references, we're trying to understand this, and it's never written down that, okay, we're assuming that for R1, any potential post-release tagging handling mortality is expressed prior to arrival and construction of V1.
As much as possible, yep.
So mm-hmm. that's an assumption that needs to be added to the 10 rules already there. And second, the other assumption that hasn't
been... if there is still post-detection handling mortality, it's going to what? Depress the S1? It's going to depress the damn survival estimate. So if it's wrong, it's at the downside. It's going to be a negative bias, and that was designed purposely. Any kind of bias, we hope it would always be negative.
Okay, so one assumption is that the expression of for R1 prior to the results. And I recognize that the effect of if there is downstream of V1, then that's the effect on the result of the answer. But the other assumption that's been explicitly stated is that in post-release tagging handling mortality is equally expressed for the R2 and R3 groups, correct?
And what we do to test that is if it's say it's differential, and it's still going on because one's a little bit further up rather than another. Then we, for example, we'll compare survival from here to here, and here to here for those pairs to see if they're homogeneous or not. In other words, if we're still seeing a differential survival between the R2 and R3 below that, that's always stacked, we're going to say, hey, it hasn't been totally expressed yet. So we can look for that incomplete expression of post-release handling mortality by looking at the survival from here down to here for that pair to see if it's homogeneous from here down to here and here to here to here. So we test that.
So are there's arrays at R2 locations?
There's an array at R2, not for the purposes of estimating damp passive survival, but one of the Fisher cord performance measures is tail race ingress time. And so we need that line as a finish line for estimated travel time.
Is there an array at R3?
That absolutely. That is a key one, because that's basically what this graph doesn't do well is that the virtual release is estimating survival from the face of the dam to the location of the R3 release. So what happens is we're estimating that virtual release from dam face all the way down to R3. Okay? But now that's a lot farther down than the tail race at the end that we're supposed to. So that's why we have the paired estimate to estimate that survival from the tail race to R3.
So given those array locations, it seems possible that you could evaluate whether there is equivalent post-release.
That's what I said. That's what we do. Exactly.
Now, I think what I've read is occurring downstream, but what I'm talking about is... So looking at, you could develop, it's not specified here right now, but you could develop an estimate of the survival for the R2 group from R2 to R3. That could be done. And that's an estimate of combined survival, whatever, intrinsic, plus any handling mortality. You could compare that to an estimate for the V1 group between those same two arrays. And that should, comparing those two would give you an estimate of what the handling mortality
is. Yes, exactly.
Except the fish that can be that you would use from R1 or from V1 if you and if you regroup those at R2, then you are likely to detect
false positives again
as a result of passing the dam, and can float down and have a false positive detection on that array, since that's only 3 kilometers downstream. Yeah, so that's
so you'd slightly underestimate the tagging handling effect, I guess.
To what degree is that though?
But I'm just saying that assessing the assumption that tagging and handling mortality is equally expressed for R2 and R3, which I think is a pretty important assumption, because Jerry and Tom brought up the potential for that tagging handling mortality to be expressed a little bit higher for the R2 group than the R3 group. One way to potentially assess whether that is indeed an issue would be to look at the estimates for those same reaches, and I recognize that there's a potential for false positive detections, but seems like that would be
it's more than that. You could have, you could have, say, drift to there, but not drift that far.
Right.
Now you could have less
bias.
Negative bias in the survival estimates. It's just, there's so many ways for that thing to be wrong and then misinterpreted. So what we do instead is, like I said, we can estimate that survival using that array. Okay? And then we can also see whether the survival for that pair is homogeneous down. I'm sorry.
I just think there's a better way to do that to get at the
issue. I wish there was, but I don't believe so. And that without potentially confounding it with other factors that we're trying to avoid in the first place. We try to, but like I said, if all the handling mortality is expressed between these two by the time they get here or down here, then they should be homogeneous downriver. And we test that. And that's uncluttered with false positive dead fish and all that kind of stuff. And then we, it'll do that, for the yearling Chinook, and then we'll do it for the steelhead and sub-yearlings and see if there's any pattern. We don't just look at one piece of evidence. We try to couple across things, because a few things that are not significant but all going in the same direction can be significant. So we try to do a meta-analysis to assess that. But I wouldn't start trying to mix up dead fish with live fish and try to sort out whether the bias is positive or negative, because it could go either way depending on where the dead fish fall out of the system.
Yeah, but it's such a critical assumption, right? I think there's biological basis to suspect that the R2 has a higher level of post-release mortality than R3.
What is that biological?
The higher density near the dams of predators and avian predators.
Okay, well, Gene just indicated that flow is ripping through there, and it's steady.
Oh, so that doesn't diminish my concern.
But isn't it ripping in the tail race where the predators are known to be the highest density, right? Isn't it ripping there?
But in the tail race, there are places for predators to hold.
And you're...
Concentrated because of your feeding.
One thing we do, and we didn't.
It is different downstream.
We're using this region for that comparison. We're releasing here and looking down here. There's no reason why we can do it down here.
John, would you mind? I can't see.
I'm sorry. Apologize.
Pointing that way. Would you just identify what it is?
Sure. I wish we could do it on the board. And apologize.
Just identify which ones they are.
Sure. So R2 and R3 look. Releases of concern,
right.
And we want to know whether they've been totally that differential. If there's handling mortality, whether it's fully been expressed by both of them by the time we use the detection site. Well, as you look down here, there's an array right above the dells. That would be sort of the closest downstream one that you could use. But there's no reason why you can use an array below the dells or further down the dells, so that there's more time for both of those to have express the handling mortality. So there's no reason why, you have to limit the analysis of that pair to that part. You can go down here and give them more time to express the equal handling mortality. If that's not part of it, analyze that pair using that the first downstream detection site. Now even more time for both of them to express that.
Yeah, but the critical aspect is the immediate.
Huh?
That's what figures into the dam survival, is the immediate
tag immortality. It's not what happens down in R4 and R5 and R6 and R7.
What's the ratio that we're using?
You're using the S2, S3, and S1, correct? I mean, yeah, but that's where the critical assumption on the post-release mortality is occurring.
But what we can do, I'm sorry, maybe not bring this up, but we can make the S2 and S3 all the way down to there so that they have a lot longer time for both of them to express each other. So there's no reason why we have to just use that array. That's the nice thing about the design. We got all these possible alternative arrays so that we can look to see how robust it is based on different processes. And that's what we did last year.
Okay.
And you can shift the S2 and S3 further down.
We can do it down to Bull Bonneville if you want, you know, if you're worried about giving them enough time to express things. So this is the shortest distance, the next array down, but there's no reason why you can't go further down. And we did that and last year with one study. And then furthermore, we didn't just stop the study down here. We looked at how robust it is when you added these arrays and these arrays and these.
What did you see when you...
Flat.
Yeah, that's...
Because what happens is you got about almost 99% detection rate at any one site. What are you adding a whole lot more information when you add 99% of the 10%? If you had 99% efficient in the first array, you missed 1%, the next array is going to get 99% of that 1% you missed. After two arrays, you're 100% and there's no additional information. So we're not surprised, but the damn survival estimate was very flat no matter how far you carried the detection field downstream.
Well, that's because you're using R2 and R3, and the distance between those don't change. With that,
just the overall,
right? But that difference is still the same all the way, no matter where you look
right.
at it.
And we're hoping it's robust, exactly.
And it, what you're doing there is you're taking out the handling effect, and then there could be some differential predation rates between those two. And those, whatever it is, whatever causes mortality, that's what you're measuring.
Yes, yes.
Whatever it is.
Yes. And his question was whether there's different handling mortality, post-handling effects.
Between these two.
Had a longer opportunity to be expressed in that one. I'm saying carried it further down till there.
That's not the issue. I don't see how that resolves the issue. It doesn't resolve the issue.
Tom's
issue, the one that
he... Yeah, there's two different issues going. One is the time allowed for post-detection handling effects to be expressed. That's what we just talked about. In terms of somehow there's a magical release zone at R2 that's either benign or worse.
We've assumed that predation rates are similar.
Is there a way to verify that one way or the other? Because, I mean, that's a concern people have brought up. If there's a way we can address it so it's taken care of, right, that takes care of a lot of concern. If there's no way we can do it, then we're going to go in knowing this is a bias that's there and hopefully it doesn't express itself. One question I had is, when you release your dead fish, how many do you see getting down to R3? How many dead fish were released?
None to R3.
And how many to R2?
Half.
Half the dead fish?
Yeah, the detection, the array at R2 is for timing. So it's not designed to get a real high detection probability. It's not like 99% for a survival array. So it may be 70% because we're using it to get time of travel.
Right. It's not the end.
But we still.
You know, I'm just wondering.
There are quite a few dead fish that are.
You thinking about using that as an end zone?
No. All I'm just trying to say, like, if the big spectrum we've got here is dead fish, dead fish is really killing at our ability to do an analysis, like, first off, if our survival is as high as we've got, we shouldn't have that many dead fish to begin with. And then the question is, if you don't have any dead fish to begin with, how many of those dead fish? Because not all of them are going to make it to detection. Right? Are you talking it's a fairly high percent or low percent? So I'm just wondering, is there a way to go at that?
You know from the route-specific information that you can have 10% of the fish that pass the turbines die, or more.
That's what I'm wondering. Is like, you guys are releasing your dead fish, I'm assuming at different locations. And like, I'm guessing a dead fish from a turbine is probably going to be a much easier thing to snack on by a predator than something coming from the spill that's going to be flushed out fairly quickly. The turbine boil is going to be...
Make an assumption there.
Yeah, well, that's my thing, is that an assumption we can test. Because if the big spectre is dead fish,
The big spectre is dead fish, though, unless you're trying to get to a single release.
The thing is, we know the tag codes for the fish that we release tagged and dead. Well, we don't know, the ones that die coming down. We don't know who they are. We just know they don't show up again. Yeah. So, but they're there. And so, that's a problem.
Where are we going?
Because we don't know what proportion of them were detected.
Do you want to split this up into two discussions at some point? I mean, there's a discussion of the model. If you assume the model's good and there's some issues that are being changed because of this two-condition, two-operation test, then that's a discussion. If you want to step back to the original model and all of its problems or lack of or whatever, then that's a different discussion.
Yes.
It seems
we've already been over one of those already, in ISRD and everybody else has.
Yeah, but. And then I would say let's move on. I don't know. One of the things I should have said up front, we sent out the proposal. If there are comments, and if you, Steve or Tom or Jerry, whoever wants to write these down and submit them, we'll give it some additional thought and see if there's a way to address them. So, but if you have comments on this, then get them to me by next Wednesday. And we'll address them as we can. Comments. Well, keep your comments, if you would, on the John Day portion of this. We'll work to address those.
Can we talk about that yet?
We haven't talked about that.
No. Yeah. I'm hoping we get a chance before we close down the meeting.
So comments on the model. Go back to the document John wrote that we brought. That's got the more of the detail I think you're looking for than this. This references that and describes it, but not in full.
The study design that was 2009 review, that one.
Right? Yeah. The documents that would address any issues we've just been talking about.
I know we talked about differential handling effects in there.
Yes.
And as far as the hydraulic influence of the project, we've all been involved in that, we've gone through that, we've all agreed that that's where that is and signed off on that, I thought. We can. But, I mean, it's still, I don't know that we're upsetting the apple cart on that at this point. I'm not. I do have some comments, though, and some concerns about the two condition test that I'd like to get out there, and maybe others do, too. So
I'll just reverse since I've been missing the first part.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm close enough for John to hit. Be careful what I say.
Okay. I guess operationally, one of the things that I wanted to bring up is part of the design. In the past, when we've done treatment tests, we've done randomized blocks. We're not doing that this year. We're going to make it systematic so that it's 30-40, 30-40, or actually, I think if I flip the coin, it starts at 30. 30-30, 40-30, all the way through the season. Huh?
It's a partially randomized design.
Systematically random, randomly systematic. But anyway,
they're
4 day blocks, 2 days of each treatment.
Is there any time between each, or are you doing just direct? Next day you're changing, so it's 30, switch to 40 the next day.
Yes, and we looked at and I haven't brought this up with these guys yet. But a request was it's the time to do the switch. We want I think that back in 2008 when we started this, the request was made by Mark Weiland or Bob Wertheimer asked him when do you want to do the switch treatments. He said, "Oh, 6 a.m. is fine," and that's what they did. Now what they've done is based on the release schedule, the idea is to have the bulk of the fish from R1. They want to arrive in the middle of the treatment to avoid having a lot of fish arriving
that's
when you're
the
making
problem.
A switch.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried
about.
And
so we would like to make the adjustment or the switch from one treatment to another around, I want to say it's around 8 or 9 o'clock
a.m.
at night.
Oh, a.m., okay.
So
that'd be fun, though.
Yeah. So
better for us, probably.
Yeah.
It's past the ramp.
And based on the release schedule, that gets the mode of each release group and arriving in the middle of the treatment, based on what it
says. When are they released?
The fish R1 is released in Arlington, or
is that
Arlington?
Where Roosevelt is? Is Arlington?
Yeah, Roosevelt's on the Washington
Roosevelt.
Side.
Yeah.
And, so it's a little better
basically
place to launch a boat
during the day.
Okay.
No, there is a day release. There's a night release.
Okay.
The schedule. Look at the schedule in the proposal. It lays out the times of the releases. And,
well, the key is to make sure that when you assign a fish, you assign it to the treatment.
Yes, and then after
proper
that's the a priori plan is to set it up that way. You know, as always happens, you know, depending on flows, the shape of the runoff, those things. We have times where fish or where treatments are not 30 and they're not 40 throughout. And so what we would probably what we'll do post hoc is come back in, look at individual fish, what time did they pass, what was the operation when they passed. And since we're pooling across the season, then
just make sure they're assigned on the right,
yes,
right so group.
Are you gonna,
the right group.
Yes.
Right.
We're just going to set up a criteria on how are you going to determine that.
Yeah, it's going to be about 35% goes to 40
yeah.
here.
That's what
we're about 35% goes to 30, or do you just drop all? So it's exactly 30 and exactly 40.
And you know, and a lot of times it depends on how the sample sizes wind up and things like that. But, you know, you can, you know, if it's, you know, 28.5 to 32.5, it's 30. If it's 40, you know, 37.5
to
42.5.
Why does sample size affect that?
Well, because if it happens a lot, and or let's say that you only have to adjust, or the spill is not 30 and it's not 40, only a little bit of time, then you can probably do a Dave set and just say, just throw out the fish that aren't and just say mm-hmm. when it was 30, when it was 40.
But as soon as you start adding them in because there's not enough, then you run into problems.
But if there's a, but if it happens, if it occurs a lot of the time mm-hmm. during the season,
right.
then you may have to open that range up a little bit to say, you know, anything from 29 to 31 is a 30. Anything from 39 to 41 is a 40.
I think that's what people are concerned about.
Yeah.
So that's going to be an issue to talk about, I think,
right.
maybe.
Yeah, so yeah, we would
do a postseason, I guess.
We can do a postseason or as we get into it.
It needs to be documented in the report.
Sure.
You know, what the
thought process was sure. and those criteria are, because as you start, that becomes arbitrary. You start opening it up, it becomes an arbitrary decision process.
So I got a question about the randomization. Why would you not randomize?
Because we want to make sure that we get equal distribution of the treatments across the season.
We could do it either way, but there was some, because it's a damn if you do and damn if you don't.
Yeah,
I mean, if you do randomize, there's some chance that in two consecutive blocks you could have 4 days of all one
right.
spill condition.
Well, okay, but my question.
Well, so would you rather have it every two or have these potential blops?
Why is it good to randomize for a treatment test and not this test? What's the difference? I mean, you run that same risk of, you know, having things, you know, grouped in part of the season when you're, you know, like, you know, all the other tests, the 08, 09, and 010 were all randomized.
Yeah.
So why go away from that now?
Because we were doing a hypothesis test of 30 versus 40. Like I said, we're not testing anymore. We're going to see whether the survival under 30% spill is in compliance or the survival under 40% spill is in compliance. At least my concern was, I was afraid that some people say if you got these 4-day blops of continuous spill feeding just because of random chance. Well, that's not very representative of the season. We had too much of this and too little of that.
I get that, but why would you randomize for a treatment test? Because you still have that same problem. You're still subject to that same potential criticism or bias.
Well, not wholly, because you're basically... Well, to do hypothesis, you got to have some randomization going on, and you don't want to have always the... Say if there was some sort of seasonal trend like
right.
this,
yeah.
and you always had the first 2 days of a block,
right.
one treatment and the other, you'd always be on the high side of a trend.
It's the seasonal right. seasonality of that.
So we randomized to avoid any kind of
right.
confounding with seasonality.
All the data, then you don't have to worry.
But if there was a seasonal trend like this and you did it systematically, they're both giving you a systematic unbiased estimate of the mean.
But that will give you the same kind of bias with the... For the performance standard.
Actually, not, sir.
No.
No.
Because you're pooling the data.
No. Think about it. You had the first block was 40-30. Well, you know, you can lay it out. It's that issue of getting 4 days of the same operation, and getting more of those.
Right.
Which
sure.
If it's random, you have a chance to get more of those towards, say, the beginning of the season. More towards the end of the season.
This way they're all evenly spread out. You all have the same number of earlies and lates.
No, I see this.
You're saying it's sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't. But
for this purpose.
For purpose of estimation, what we thought was better to do was systematically, so you have an even spread of earlies and lates, no blops in the middle, you know what I'm saying?
Right. For the population, this would be better.
Yeah, for, again, if it was hypothesis, I'd go back to the randomization. But for estimation, You change objectives, you change your design to a degree.
Yeah,
we're not trying to pull something. We're trying to do what's best for this objective, which is compliance testing.
It's just that you can't get both objectives, and I know that's what you'd like to do, is you'd like to get the other, you know, the treatment comparison as well.
Well, certainly, yeah. But,
I don't think so. That's what they're not. They're kind of disallowing that with this.
Right.
I shouldn't say it that way.
We made a similar request at McNary back when we were testing 40 versus 60. And I don't know if this does the same effect, but we requested, I know you set out your pattern, but we looked at how many of those high school days fall on weekends. Would it be possible if I took a look and see if I flipped the signs on yours, if we get more 40% spill on weekends and 30% fish don't care if it's Saturday or Sunday, but BPA does something. I don't know if it's going to be an issue or not. But would that be a problem if you guys might
jump in? I don't see that as an issue, as long as we still have the same.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was just looking to see where these days actually.
No, that's okay.
Is 30.
Go ahead.
It may not make a difference at all, but just if it's a day or two, it will change it. If you guys don't mind.
Second weekend is 30.
Cool.
It's already done
for you.
Oh, there we go.
So I want 40% of the weekend.
Third weekend is 40.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's random, too.
Whatever works out for you. Yeah, you just have to run through them all and see how.
It's the
table.
It's the
table.
It's column table.
It's over there.
It's squeaky leg.
Is it annoying you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. What happened? Oh, I see. You're stopping the test over Memorial Day weekend, right? That's the break.
Summer.
I see. It's a bummer. Yeah.
Huh?
There's a break in there.
Between the spring and the summer?
Yeah. A couple of days, and it just happens to fall on Memorial Day weekend. Yeah.
You know, I guess what this boils down to me, is there's the preseason, there's a the pre-test comments, and then there's post-test comments. My really pertain to post. And if we're going to do the study, we're going to do it the way we're going to do it, which is this design. Then there's still the issue I have, because you have the two treatments. You have one pooled control, which were partially represent one and partially represent the other treatment. Can those truly be pooled as one? Mm-hmm. And that's the question I have. And
too common.
Kind of a post test evaluation to make sure that you have a homogeneous, and within what degree of tolerance do you say that they are homogeneous? I mean,
you want me to address that?
Yes.
I have the same concerns. So.
Sure. You know, obviously we have different virtual releases under the two conditions, so you got the 30% and 40% represented. Then the issue is, well, should we also be having separate 30% and 40% controls, at least the R2?
Right.
And part of it goes down to two issues. One is sample size, because if you got double it, you're going to have to double it, and it's going to be 800 per species times three, and
that's
a chunk.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other issue partially came to, well, if theoretically the line of the R2 is below the mixing zone, there shouldn't be any spill effect at the R2 line. So theoretically, if you put the R2 line where you put it,
it should
be below the tail race effect.
You would be below the hydraulic effects, but you're not necessarily below water quality effects. You know, there could be a difference in gas saturation levels.
Yeah.
That's possible.
It's possible, yes. And so part of it is the assumption.
It's an assumption.
And it is. So we can test the assumption.
Right.
And there's a couple ways of doing this. Again, typically I like to use all the information given to me. So let's just look at John Day and say, so for the John Day per se, we're going to have 400 R2s during the blocks of 30% spill. We're going to have 400 fish released under the 40% spill blocks, okay? And that's out of the 800 total. So we could compare downstream survival from R2 to each of the arrays to see if they're homogeneous or not during those two conditions. And we can test for that. Mm-hmm. Now, 400, well, in some ways it's a hell of a lot of fish, in some ways it's not. In terms of detecting small differences, we're not going to be able to detect with 400 fish. Okay, but that's one piece of information for yearling Chinook. So let's, the other possibility, well, this is where you milk the cow a couple of times. We also have fish coming down 3,000 of them.
Right.
Well, so what you're going to hopefully get down here, and we're going to have this line here, which is basically just used for what? Travel time information. Mm-hmm. But we could form a virtual release group. I don't like to, but we could form a virtual release group under the 30%, 40% conditions.
Okay.
And test whether survival now for roughly 1,300 to 1,400 fish additionally have homogeneous survival from here downward.
For both of those conditions.
So why would you not want to do that?
I don't like to because there's the possible dead fish issue.
The dead fish issue could be differential.
Differential, yes. So you could...
You'd
be helping or scrambling yourself.
So you could scramble yourself. I like the other one better.
Yeah.
But
the other one's clean.
It's cleaner. I'd just like to know what your detectable difference is.
But this is a backup. So yeah. I've got now basically two more comparisons, roughly about 1,300 per.
Okay.
If they show the same trend, two flips of the coin, all going tails.
Right.
Then we got steelhead going down at the same time. We got the 400 steelhead.
That's true.
And then we have another 1,300 comparison with the steelhead virtuals. So either any one of them that may not be marvelously powerful. Right. Four of them, if they all show the same pattern, we got it nailed.
Okay.
And so we're going to analyze it four ways to Sunday, none of which are perfectly perfect, but hopefully together, it's called a meta-analysis.
Okay.
And you know, for example, sir, it's like, you know, even if each of them is significant at the 0.49 level, four of them on one side of the tail is significant at the 0.0625 level.
Okay.
You know, so they just have to be all pointing in the right direction or wrong direction, depending on your indication.
Right.
So we can look at it using lots of information to test whether that assumption is homogeneous or not. The problem is, if we find that they're not, then we're screwed.
I know. Yeah, well, that's
because then the sample size is 400, and then the precision is going to be probably not what we want.
Well, that's a fairly significant concern.
Well, the meta-analysis is going to be really tight.
.05, is that going to be a significant difference enough for you to throw the whole thing out?
Well, like I said, just say each one of those four analyses was significant at the 0.49 level.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit to the left of
then
center.
Throw it out?
Four. That's like having four flips of a coin on tails. What's the chance of four tails in a row? 1/2 times 1/2 times 1/2 times 1/2, 1 in 16. Alpha level is
0.0625. Okay.
You know, so it's very powerful. You know, and that's why I said we don't want to just use one piece of information. We always try to look at all pieces of information to give us more of a trend information. We do the same thing with taggers. We don't just look at tag effects for the Chinook at John Day just using the John Day data. We use the same data at the Dells and Bonnevilles to see if there's any kind of consistency. If we see it, we nailed it.
I think we're just saying, be clear at what point you set that at to throw that analysis out, to throw those tagging groups, those control groups out. Say that they aren't properly mixed.
Well, this needs to be written up and then...
Well, if it's significant at the 0.05, well, we'll pop.
At the 0.05.
Was that in the proposal? I didn't read it.
Yeah.
It's not rated high likelihood that they're going to be significant at the 0.05 level. I mean, they'd have to be drastically different, right, in order to be significant at that level. What those tagging levels. I would just think with this 400 versus 400, they would have to be drastically...
Well, that's why I said we won't just use those 400. We'll use the 400 Chinook, we'll use the 400 Steelhead, then we'll use the 1,300-1,400 virtual releases, and then we'll use the 1,300-1,400 Steelhead releases, so we have four analyses. And that's going to be much more dramatic. We said none of them have to be significant to be significant.
Okay.
As long as they all four point the same direction.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No difference.
And we do that like tagger effects and stuff. We use meta-analysis to increase our power.
You have a plan.
And the thing, too, is, you know, basically, if you got a difference of, 0.2 difference in survival, no, we will never detect it, but then the bias in the survival list is going to be tiny, too. You know, so it's a tiny, whiny little difference, and it's going to be a tiny, whinier bias in survival list, and you don't care. You know, so at some point, little power means little effect.
Right.
I think we need to have an addendum to this study plan that describes what you just were talking about.
Yeah, sure. I think that's
the
key.
We could write that up.
When I read through this, that's the key assumption I see in change.
Yeah.
That's a key. That's really the only.
Well, and a prayer.
That's the only change.
Well, there's another one. There's actually a couple of prayers that we have in here, and that's at the water.
In the sense that, I mean, if we don't have whole genome, then we might be inadequate sample size.
Well, that was my concern.
How are you going to be able
to really get 40 and 30?
Right, there's a couple of situations here where we could fail. One of them is this. You could fail there, or you could fail in terms of getting your two conditions. And how do you handle that at the end of the day? I mean, what's BPA going to say if we have a successful 40 test and we don't get a 30 test, it's 37 and a half? You know, how do you view that? And you say, well, sorry, but we wanted to do a 30 test. This whole study goes out the window. We got to do it again next year.
Risk every year.
Is that random?
It's not the same. It's a risk every year when you're doing one test. When you're doing two tests like this one, it's a little different because you could be successful in one side of the, but not successful in the other, but never really tested the other. I think I could see BPA coming back and saying, well, yeah, we know you can meet the standard of 40, but you never tested 30. We want you to go back and do it all over again. None of it counts.
We might ask that. Wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, me either.
Wouldn't surprise me either.
I guess I said my piece, but I'm a little worried about what, you know, we're looking like a 208 year coming off the hill.
Maybe 206.
Yeah, well, it depends on how it warms up.
Things are
stacking up. It can warm up big time in late April, and we're in trouble.
Well, we've done everything we can as far as pre-planning. We've got John Day at the bottom of the spill priority list, so it'll be the last one to go in involuntary. Chief Joe and Cooler below it. As far as the mainstream projects.
My wife, she chose blowing.
You could have somebody take a look to see where your pinch points are going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, what your available units are, what your river flows are, and where on your list you could be looking at a calendar and you could say what flows you're going to hit on certain days are going to throw you over or throw you. You're not going to be able to hit 30 on that day or you're not going to be able to hit 40 that day. But, you know.
Well, you can't change the design.
No, you can't change the design.
And you're kind of in a situation.
How many blocks you think you're going to lose?
Oh, wait, we missed it half the time. So, you know, we missed 30 on half the blocks. So, you know, if we've got an OA type of year, we've got a severely crippled study here, I think. And I just think that, you know, without any kind of agreements going into this, I don't expect that we would get any. We're kind of in a situation where we could have a successful test and have to do it all over again because it's not.
Yeah, what happens if the winds start blowing like crazy and then the river shuts down?
Well, that's shut down.
Then you're spilling your. You have to spill.
Yeah, you're forced. Well, that's what the spill priority list is all about, but you can dig down to John Day real quick.
Well, it's more transmission.
I don't know why. I still don't understand Chief Joe with the HOQ.
Chief Joe may not help. Chief Joe's on a different transmission line.
That's true. Good point. I was looking at HOQ, you know.
That got explained yesterday at TMT. Can you relate it, Doug?
The spill priority list?
Yeah, why Chief Joe is tied to Cooley.
Perhaps we could talk about that later. Yeah.
That's not
perhaps
not germane at this point, I guess, but it does, you know, I mean it's too bad we couldn't get some relief there. But on the other hand, I have to stress that moving John Day around for the sake of the study doesn't make me feel very good because this study is supposed to represent a normal situation. What we would do in a normal situation.
All we did was actually end up shifting in a couple of spots.
I don't think it's a big deal, but I just don't want to get too far down that path because that's trying to set up a condition that's not normal and we're supposed to be testing what we expect to get in the future. So, yeah, right.
One question. Have you looked at unit outages? I looked the other day and it looked like you might have at least two units of John Day out through May-ish.
Yeah.
And if you have a high flow year, you might press those guys.
Some rewinds and some other. Yeah.
There's a 5-year overhaul.
Wake up, Tammy.
Well, that's normal. That's
there is. Yeah, you don't force them back into service just for a test. I agree with that.
I'm just
saying. You could probably look at the schedule and see that they scheduled probably two units out this time of the year. Forever.
Yeah,
I'm
with Jason.
I don't, all on the same schedule.
Whatever happens. Let it rip.
We'll look at it.
Unless you got a bunch of forced outages and you're repairing something, that it may be different. But
if you would normally handle it that way, then normally handle it that way. But if you wouldn't, then don't.
Phone call to Dennis.
Can we talk about the four bay and how's delay and travel time are measured?
for the Accord measures.
There's a four-bay?
I see some very different things between projects. I see in the 2009 study proposal talking about mean travel times. And that was a question, and we'll clarify that it's going to be mean. And then I see results from Bonneville and John Day that are all median. And then I see the four bay at the Dalles defined 100 meters up to the dam, up to the dam face, and then.
Well, that's in the fish accords. The mean, the fish accords use the word mean. So, yeah, so I didn't mean because they said mean, even though historically we've tended to do median, but since the accord says you do A, I do A,
That had to be a typo.
Typo? Same first letter, The second one, too, So part of the definition, seriously, the court said mean, so we did what the court said to do. Also, the issue of the 100 meter thing is in the courts to find as that. So it took a lot of effort actually to figure out the travel time from the 100 meters to the face of the dam because you had to integrate fish movements to figure out when they crossed the 100 meter line and then had the clock start there. My understanding. So all of what was in the 100 in the 2010 accord was based strictly on the wording of the accord, So if you want to change the wording of the accord, that's fine. But I'm beyond my power.
What I'd like to see is in the reports that the mean and median. Probably a good way to present the data.
Yeah, I think
well,
actually.
I'd like to see that the VRC, the dam face travel times, in addition to
others. So, my understanding for this coming year is that the 100 meter thing has been dropped for the 4-bay VRC travel time. That's a new understanding, and that median will be given and mean. But we certainly did according to the wording of the accord. It's like a document, it's a legal document of sorts,
Are we using VRZ again? We have the four bay zone defined.
Defined, that's...
Years ago, that
report. So, I think that those are being synonymous.
So we're calling that VRZ, but it's not VRZ.
It's
the four bay line.
Yeah, four bay line, yeah.
Whatever the hydraulic limit was.
And then we still need something to compare it to the accords to demonstrate that we're not backsliding.
Well, and back in our meeting in January, and I believe Tom, you agreed with this.
I heard
we don't need that 100 meters. Do we need to measure the 100 meters?
Okay.
So
the data in the accords is medians, by the way, even though it says means.
Yeah. All three of us, I think, remember that. So it was all medium.
It's supposed to be medium, but somehow we got that mean. So.
Well, explain that to the judge.
So it's easy to report both, though, I
think. Legal.
I can't remember the anyways.
And John, what's the standard error for your dam survivals that you're trying to?
Okay, the biop says the standard error has to be less than 1.5 percentage points, 0.015, for it to be a valid study. That's one of the large sample sizes. It's a fairly tight criteria.
And what will be the process for distributing the data? Fairly raw data and metadata.
How raw? You want it before it's filtered?
What's that?
You want it before it's filtered?
I want the metadata on the fish, individual fish, and I want the detections, the final set of detections at all the arrays.
Well, that was in the last year's report. We have that in the appendix.
Not all of the. He's talking about individual detections.
Oh, individual fish detections?
Yes.
Well, we have the capture history, so those are individuals.
Yeah. Are you talking capture histories?
No,
Steve?
I want something broader than that, so that I can generate capture histories. I say that it looked like you guys gave out to GS and NOAA the 2010 Dalles data.
Mm-hmm.
we gave them the detection events.
For doing that, yes. Distributing it to other entities besides GS and NOAA.
The reason that GS and NOAA were given it when they were given it, because they were funded to do a parallel analysis using the new model. Without using the new software to the model.
So we don't need to follow that process, but we can, those data can be made available.
Those data can be made available.
Once
the report is out, perhaps once the draft report is out. But that's about as early as,
We should talk about that and how that's done for a standardized approach. Is there going to be a repository for metadata or for clean data?
Yes, we are.
We've talked about it over time.
We funded John to create a repository.
University.
John.
And that'll have the detection events, which means that if fish hits on a line, you may hit it multiple times, you'll get each detection event.
Okay.
And then you need to process that to get it down to capture histories, because there may be redundancy in the detection events.
Right,
it'll be at that level. And then you could either use your own software to convert the detection events to capture histories, which is often used in survival analysis, or we have our own software that you could use to take the detection events and convert them to capture histories.
You've already filtered the...
Yeah, it's filtered from the signal level. You know,
level, you know it's a fish. This is right.
And it'll be a first... And if a detection event will be defined as a first and last... You'll have a time stamp at the first and last time you saw it at that line.
Right.
Then you might see it again at that line some other...
So
5 minutes later, 10 minutes later.
Replicates and all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can decide which of those detection events or how you define those detections to capture histories.
Are there any false detections in that data set?
I'm sorry?
Are there any false detections in that data set? That
hopefully at that point the filtering process has eliminated those.
So you need that data set if you wanted first and last detection, you'd have to have that data set.
Yes.
You would
want that data set if you wanted first and last detection.
Which data set?
Actually, that's in the capture history. First and last.
Yeah, the detection events will have the timestamp for the first time a fish was in a line to the last time.
Okay.
But there might be intermediates.
Right. So why wouldn't the capture history do that?
It's only one other thing I'm not going to bring up.
Capture doesn't tell you what time the first and last
the detection event. Yeah.
Well, they're talking about capture history. I'm talking about 1-0.
Oh, okay.
Those data sets are available.
That'd be the one you'd want, probably. Instead of having
something like that.
Multiple detections.
I just wanted to tee up that that's something I'm interested in, and I think a lot of other people are interested in. There's been references that eventually, hopefully, we'll get the data into a Pentagus type system, but I just want to see that move forward because I think it's really important.
It just takes time.
It's
important for a lot of people.
I at this point in time, I'm not comfortable having that data available as soon as the detection stuff comes in. I've had instances in my own experiences where people have analyzed my data and gone out to the region before I've had a chance to do that. I tell you, at least up front, data is not going to be available immediately to the public until. And the other with performance center stuff, we don't want 2, 3, 4, 5 numbers coming out of different people floating around out there.
So is that going to be coordinated wall?
The stuff that John is doing is intended to be.
You'll have to address.
We funded John for
what
3 years.
What the schedule is for getting that out?
Huh?
You'll need to address what the schedule is for that. Because getting it out,
it has to be
well beyond the decision point. Then becomes kind of problematic too.
It's got to be out and available before decisions get made, based on that the initial analysis. And I think that it's going to be important to get the analysis that is generated from each of these studies independently reviewed. Not just by us.
Thought about
We've done that. It's
not for the study design, but the actual study.
You know, a bunch of money every single year to have someone other.
I wouldn't expect that either.
But survival.
Well, maybe this first go around, this big study, that might not be a bad idea.
We did it last year, and we got the same. They got the same.
Independent
analysis.
I'm not so sure that those guys are
Steve Smith. It was a science center.
I wouldn't go with the science center.
I wouldn't call them independent.
Or
why is this?
Well, when it comes to this,
I think I would go with the University of Michigan or something like that. That's what I'd go with. I mean, I would go way outside the range.
I mean, I know what a fish is.
That's probably true.
That's what I want.
Okay.
That's what I'm after. Walleye,
there you go.
Walleye.
I don't want them to have any idea what's happening. Michigan's the wrong place, Florida.
Well, so, and that's something else that I raised at SCT that I'll just raise here, and I wish Mike was still here, but Jason's still here, and that is we need the management decision framework for how this data is going to be utilized to determine whether or not you're meeting performance standards. That needs to be out and discussed in the region as well. Yep. I know this isn't the right forum. I just want to.
We have a division representative here that can address.
Get a rope here.
Get a rope.
And like you said,
I think I have one here, actually.
You carry it with you.
It'll work.
So you can release it on May 10th? All right.
Yeah, don't hold your breath. Wait for the judge.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what it's.
What?
So see May 10th?
What's May 10th?
It's
the day after the hearing.
What?
The day after the hearing.
Smell roll in August.
The 10th is the day after the hearing.
Oh, okay. I'm like, what?
So, what
herring?
Red herring?
I don't hear anything.
Okay, well, anything else? We covered the things I think that I had thought we would. I don't have anything, so let's see if I can summarize this issue raised about R2. Being more prone to predation than R3. We can discuss that a little further, see, but I don't think it's covered. But the common control issue for the two big ones. So testing those, we can we'll discuss that a little more.
Tammy was taking notes.
Here's the question about randomization.
I've got that covered.
Randomization.
Well, don't we need to settle that? We can't do one and then argue later.
He was summarizing what we've talked about.
Okay. Are we happy, though, with the systematic?
Do you want what we talked about, or do you want action?
Who's not happy with what randomized?
One issue, Jason, you might consider about putting all the 40s on the weekend is... This year may not be an issue, especially because the weekends usually see a drop in flow. So you may not want to be too, you might do it more sporadically.
That bias is. I don't think that that's right at all. I don't think there should be any. I'm a bit concerned that if this systematic or random systematic design has a high, a high proportion of those operations fall on a weekend when flows are generally lower, then that's adding a confounding effect.
That's for sure.
And so...
That could happen with randomization too, you know, by chance.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's not accounted for, there will be a confounding effect.
Well, if it's random, it's okay, but if it's chosen, that's what you're saying, Steve.
It's not random. Either way, but if there is a trend that either operation has a
tendency for lower flows than either the other operation, that is a confounding variable in addition to the differences in spill.
Yeah.
And the blue blocks are the 30%. Is that right? So is that correct?
Yeah.
So you can go through here real quick and see. Here's a Saturday that's split, partly 40, partly 30.
I can't imagine. If there have been four-day blocks.
Maybe that's something we'll just all
4-day blocks with some things that's going to happen.
We have the opportunity to make comments.
Unless you choose it to happen that way, then it kills it for you if you're forcing it. So that'd be the caveat to your...
Yep, I'll take a look.
Yeah.
Here's one that's split right in half.
What Saturday, it says here.
Saturday's 30, Sunday's 40.
Okay, so something to some of anything, am I missing anything? Data access.
Yeah, that's an important issue.
You're promised independent.
Bent. Jim, are you suggesting you brought up the issue about where the decision process needs to be made?
No, just how are the data going to be used to determine whether or not you are meeting the performance standards?
Right.
What criteria?
Right. What are the criteria?
Yeah.
Can you trade one dam off of on another
dam? If it was a perfect study, it'd be easy to determine, but it's not going to be. So, how do you make choices?
Okay. So, comments. If you have comments on this proposal, get them to me by next Wednesday. And we'll address them as quickly as we can.
And you're going to prepare an addendum describing the whatever it was, I forget how exactly it was.
Assumptions
and for the changes that are for the John Day aspect of this.
It was common control.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How are we going to test that?
The test, four-way test or four-part test or whatever. Explain that. Tell us exactly what the precision is going to be.
And then, Brett, one question on that.
Results, in other words, over the years we have these compliance tests, and someone says, okay, enough is enough. You did or didn't make the mark. Is there such a forum?
Oh, jeez.
No,
SRWG.
I don't want to fucking do it.